Cristo está aqui.
And we also not having much time. I'm hoping that everybody does have the program which we are going to be following as much as is possible. We do have a number of eminent people among us, but we are not going to name any. But I cannot help but have a special welcome for our veteran. We do have our veteran here, Ahmed Basasa. Some of us in South Africa think these are the people who brought us to where we are. And a person like him is among us. We say we are in good faith. Mine is not to say why we are here. I have the chairperson next to me here. That is Honorable Makama, the chairperson of the protocol committee, who is going to be engaged as to why we are here. So first is to say we are really appreciating that we take time to come to here, and we are going to be sharing openly. And we have arrived at a conclusion as long as we have those. Without saying much, therefore, I'm going to be turning over. If you allow me, I'm not even going to introduce the speaker, but we'll take another 5 minutes to introduce them. But then you look at the time, so you find that it is having about 10, 15 minutes. So allow me up front to say, I'm not going to say much as to who they are. What is in the program is good enough. The only person that will come in at 9:35, our Deputy Minister of the Mapela, could not be here. He is going to be represented by our brother, Alfred Joe Stoll. He is among us. That is the only slight change in the program. Otherwise, before following the program to the ladder. I'll straight away give over to my chairperson, Honorable Makama, to indicate as to why you are here and even what are the intentions.
Thank you very much, chairperson. Let me start by acknowledging and saluting our veteran, and indeed our icon. Mr. Ahmed Kakrahev, who is largely known as Randall Kathy within the movement. Let me welcome the excellencies, ambassadors, and representatives from the various embassies, honorable members, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen. It is an honor for me to talk to you on the matters that appear on our agenda today. Now, suffice it to say, it states that this is a important meeting, an important gathering. Firstly, because it is essentially the first of its kind. Hosted by Parliament, but it is also a first of its kind for bringing together such a disparate group of people from various walks of life, civil society, there's people from religious organizations, there's the trade unions, there's political parties, there's members of Parliament, there's struggle heroes and heroines. We have now missed the Deputy Minister, let me acknowledge you, sir, and of course members of your delegation from the department. And so it's important in that respect, because really for the first time we are able to come together as this very deeply involved in very organizations to talk about the matters that lie close to our hearts. speak, the theme of this conference is fostering solidarity to build a just and better world. Now, it is perhaps poignant that we gather here during a time when there's quite a lot of economic instability in the world. And this inevitably plays into the issues that we deal with. There's the matters of global threats to business security. And we see the turmoil taking place in the central part to the northern part of our own continent. Perhaps more notably, the incredible conflict is here. Now, firstly, as human beings, there is innate in us a kind of empathy built into human beings. Whether it's empathy for the pains of other people that they might undergo at any given time, or empathy for any given difficulty that or that other human beings might undergo. But this, I contend, is as a result of the fact that there always is that, even if at a subconscious level, a realization that all of us are tied together, and that the progress or otherwise of our brethren affects our own. And so, as a parliament, in engaging with the matter of solidarity, and may I add from the word go that we've undertaken quite an extensive inquiry into the matters affecting Palestine, Western Sahara, and Cuba. Many of you that I see here today were at previous engagements, whether it was a symposium, whether it was a workshop, whether it was a committee briefing, and then so on. And you have seen and participated in these engagements. Today, essentially, is what we see as a culmination of the work we've done. We have, amongst others, at least in the past 4 years, we've gone to specifically on the matter of Palestine, and that is where most of the work really was done. And we've gone to the extent of visiting, Gaza, we visited West Bank, and indeed Israel, in an effort to get a better understanding of the situation obtaining on the ground. Now, that doesn't make us foolish on the subject, but it gives us a pretty good idea of the hardships and suffering of the Palestinian people. And in fact, Madiba said that the freedom of South Africa cannot be complete unless the matter of Palestine is resolved. Now, it speaks to what I just said, that we are inextricably linked to each other, and that our own progress depends on the progress of others. And it would be fallacious to think that we can move forward alone in the world and remain unaffected by difficulties experienced by other peoples. Now, this year marks the 20th celebration of our democracy. 20 years of freedom from centuries of oppression and subjugation. Freedom from slavery and barbaric oppression. Freedom from the status of being treated as subhuman. Freedom from apartheid, colonialism, and oppression. And indeed, this is a very painful part of our history. But, honorable members, as we celebrate our freedom, we must do so cognizant of the fact that indeed our liberation was in part possible because the international community supported our struggle, amongst others, the public condemnation of apartheid, condemnation of the regime's brutal excesses against what was essentially a defenseless and in every respect a stateless black population in our country. Thus, the freedom we enjoy today should not be taken lightly, should not be taken for granted. For it was bought at a price too high to contemplate. Now, I therefore want to take the opportunity to perhaps caution against complacency. Because you see, having won our freedom near 20 years ago, there always is a looming risk that we may become so comfortable and complacent about these newly acquired freedoms that we forget indeed that not so long ago this conference amongst others would not have been possible. In fact, it was unthinkable. Let alone that the fact that it takes place within the presence of Parliament. Now, the price paid for this freedom includes the blood of non-South Africans, of people who, if they chose to do so, could have stood apathetic to our plight. They could have said it has nothing to do with me. They could have walked away. And they simply could have denied that there were still problems in South Africa. And that there was a suppressed and oppressed and subjugated majority. And so these people, in countries so far away, they could have, as I said, elected, if they chose to do so, to proverbially bury their heads in the sand. Now, in giving perspective, honorable members, to our suffering, and expressing our collective desires for freedom and giving hope for a better future, a renowned revolutionary and internationalist, Che Guevara, had this to say. He said that humanity has set enough and has set itself in motion. Its giant steps will not stop until they lead to true independence. Chairperson, in setting in motion these giant steps, men and women from different lands across different continents came together in a spirit of progressive internationalism and solidarity to shower pain and sorrow. In Angola, they risked being bombed in oblivion. Indeed, they were in Kasinga on 4 May 1978, when indeed apartheid forces attacked a camp, what was essentially a refugee camp in Kasinga. In Maseru, Lesotho, Basotho lost their limbs and lives in defense and in support of the struggle for freedom in our own country. Speak to Botswana and Gaborone. Speak to people in Matola in Mozambique. Speak to people in London, in Glasgow, in Amsterdam. All of them have made a significant contribution. They have suffered beatings in some instances. Some were jailed for support. Indeed, in Cuba, they lost 2016 soldiers who lost their lives in the field battles between the UN Angolan forces and the South African Defense Force. Now these peoples, ladies and gentlemen, without any expectation of benefit, and conscious of the risks to their lives, to their property and livelihood, chose to stand by the side of the oppressed, instead of being kowtowed by the apartheid regime's sympathetic governments. They chose the moral high ground. Instead of silence, they condemned the brutality visited against a defenseless and humiliated population. Instead of denial, they chose to confront the injustice and stand shoulder to shoulder in solidarity with us. This they did, I'm convinced, in defense of their humanism and advancement of our own collective humanity. Chairperson, people around the world, across vast lands and continents, understood that their humanity is indeed inextricably linked to our own. While most of them did not know any two or three South Africans by name, they were united in their hatred for racism, colonialism, and injustice. They understood that their humanity was confirmed through the humanity of others, and that their own progress was inextricably linked to our progress. Now, for the first time in world history, the cries of the African child found resonance in the hearts and minds of people across the globe. In spite, may I add, of their heartland positions adopted by some of the country, their governments, such as the American administration in the US and the Dutch government in the UK. Now, ordinary citizens of those countries took it upon themselves to lead the struggle against apartheid. They recognized the interdependence of the human species and the common threads of the yearning for human rights, justice, equality, and peace that binds all of us together. And summing up this bit of solidarity and a shared destiny, the former president of the Republic of Cuba, Fidel Castro, had this to say. He said, some imperialists ask why we are helping Angola, what our interest is. They assume that countries only act out of a desire for petrol, copper, diamonds, or some other resource. No, we have no material interest, he said. Of course, the imperialists don't understand this, for they would only do it for geoistic and selfish reasons. We are fulfilling an elementary international duty in helping the people of Angola. And in predicting the demise of apartheid, Fidel Castro then said, and I quote, that the history of Africa is the turning point. He will write about before Peter Navale and after Peter Navale. Because of the power of South Africa, the whites, the superior race has come unstuck in a little parcel of land defended by blacks and mulattoes. We do not seek a great military victory, but a reasonable and just solution. They might not only lose Namibia, but apartheid too. We want a solution now, and I believe we are witnessing the beginning of the end of apartheid. Close quote. Now, as we painfully and dedicatedly attempt to extricate our country from the rubble left behind by apartheid, we must do so always conscious of the internationalist duty bequeathed to us, both by history and destiny. Our country must therefore always stand and be counted as a people of hope in times of darkness. We stand pronounced as a pertinent reminder to the rest of the world of the triumph of good over evil. And South Africa shall forever stand tall as a monument of human solidarity and collective moral action. Chairperson, honorable members, delegates, history has forever tied our destiny to the attainment of the right to self-determination of the people of Western Sahara. Never said history and destiny. And in this regard, the strategic task for South Africa and the continent are very clear. We must end the evil of colonialism and occupation in what is essentially the last colony on the African continent. And to this end, the continued occupation of the Sahrawi people is contingent upon the outrageously wide-scale theft of fish and mineral resources of Western Sahara, with the spoils divided amongst them between Spain, France, the US, the EU, and amongst us, to the exclusion, in fact, of Sahrawi people themselves. The Kingdom of Morocco is unable to act with impunity in committing these atrocities against the Sahrawi people, because they enjoy the ironclad protection of powerful permanent members of the Security Council. But this is an average. And it is precisely because of this fact that the United Nations Security Council did not attach a human rights monitoring mechanism to the United Nations mission in Western Sahara. Now, not only is this a serious abrogation of their international responsibility, but it is a complete deviation and outside of the norm of how the United Nations engage with this matter. Now, this, bolstered by a fabricated statement in the Security Council, forever condemns the Sahrawi people to be permanent refugees in refugee camps in Algeria and indeed in the diaspora. They are condemned to being exiled and prisoners in their own homeland, held captive by Moroccan monarchy. Honorable members, Palestine has been on the global agenda for more than 6 years with no resolution in sight. In the meantime, any prospect of the resolution becomes dimmer by the day as the occupying power, the state of Israel, flouts international law with a kind of impunity, only seen perhaps before and during World War II. Now, this again speaks to the very issue of being essentially enabled by powerful members of the Security Council who give them the necessary protection within the multilateral system to be able to act with the kinds of impunity that they exhibit. Now, as in the case of Western Sahara, Palestine represents one of the last vestiges of colonial occupation of one people by another. Now, in this context, we remain resolute in our rights, in our support for the rights to self-determination and statehood for the Palestinian people, living side by side and in peace and security with the state of Israel. The central irony of this impasse is that it is precisely that which the Israelis refuse to let go, which is indeed their only hope of achieving a lasting peace with their neighbors. Precisely that. Because if the matter of Palestine is addressed, that will resolve a large part of the problems in the Middle East. Not everything. But it will deal primarily with the matters of peace and security that the state of Israel also. Which country in the world doesn't want to live in peace and security? But that will come at a price. And the price is to allow the Palestinians their right to self-determination and statehood. Now, we want to take this opportunity to reiterate our commitment to continue actively to campaign for these views, both of the people of Western Sahara and indeed the people of Palestine. And key and critical is that we must necessarily find ways to ensure that the human rights violations that take place in Western Sahara are indeed monitored on a daily basis, such as is the case with all other similar problems that exist anywhere else. And so, we should not be asked nor expected to ignore these brutal occupations. They are brutal, they are illegal in international law, and they are unsustainable. Now, I want to highlight an issue, and I hope that this conference will address perhaps in some of the discussions that you will undertake. There is what I deem to be a mischievous, if not outright dangerous attempt by some lobby groups to portray the Palestinian question in particular as a clash between the religions, primarily between Islam on the one hand, Judaism and Christianity on the other. And all criticism against the Israeli state's excesses are either automatically portrayed as anti-Jewish or anti-Semitic. Now, in my view, this is a tactic employed primarily for two reasons. One is to silence any criticism of the Israeli government and its excesses, its cruelty against Palestinians. First, secondly, it is an attempt to mobilize the support of South African citizens in particular behind the occupation of the Palestinian people. Now, to achieve this, and all sorts of religious insinuations and connections are made to an issue which essentially is a human rights issue. It's not a religious issue. And And may I ask that this matter is essentially about the subjugation of one people by another. It is a matter about discrimination and the breach of international law. It's essentially about the breach of the human rights of Arab people, in fact, the denial of the human rights of other people. And I want to caution that this attempt to portray this issue in the light of a clash between religions is indeed dangerous, and I think that is and is an attempt that has the potential to undermine the security of the Republic of South Africa. So this is primarily aimed at pitting one South African against the other on the basis of religion or religious sectarian lines, whose effects we have seen. In fact, we see the spillover of that in Mali today, amongst others. So it's something that we need to be very careful in terms of how we engage with it. Because if there's one thing that almost everybody is emotional about is their religion. Is their religion. And so it needs to be dealt with very carefully. Now, on the matter of Cuba, let me draw your attention to the plight of the island nation of Cuba, who, because of their revolutionary spirit of their nationalism and solidarity, made enormous sacrifices. And indeed paid a high price in the form of financial and material resources in addition to the loss of lives. As I said to you earlier, in the battles in Angola, 2016, Cuban soldiers lost their lives in what famously became known as the Battle of Cutapana Valley. Now this intervention in Angola is what directly led to the subsequent negotiations held leading to the declaration of Resolution 435, bringing about the independence of Namibia, and indeed subsequently paving the way for our freedom. Now, in South Africa, artillery liberation, and to this day, with the very limited resources at the disposal of Cuba, their commitment to South Africa has not wavered, nor waned. They continue to assist our country in the consolidation of our newfound freedom. And they do this through providing a large contingent of doctors and other technical expertise to our public sector, and in particular our public hospitals. Now, in the international arena, our two countries work closely together and coordinate on a number of issues. Cuba has remained one of our staunch supporters and indeed a loyal friend and a loyal and reliable ally. And in this vein, I want to emphasize the imperative that it beholds South Africa and their people to continue to sustain the same spirit of progressive internationalism and solidarity from which we benefited during our difficult times. As in our case not so long ago, the international community, and indeed we must take the lead, to continue to analyze the plight of the people of Cuba, who continue to experience untold suffering as a result of the unilateral trade embargo imposed upon them by the government of the United States. This makes it very difficult and near impossible for Cubans to acquire many of the very basic amenities needed to live normal lives. We remain steadfast behind our government call for the U.S. to adhere to international law by lifting this economic embargo. And we furthermore reiterate the call for the release of the remaining four of the human files still languishing in U.S. prisons. The only crime, honorable members, Congress delegates, committed by these patriots was to collect information on hostile criminal terrorist elements that have over many years inflicted horrible pain and suffering on the people of Cuba, leading in fact to the deaths of over 3,478 lives, Cuban lives. These five Cubans did their national patriotic duty in defense of their country and their people. And it is the same call to national service that is driving the so-called war on terror. All countries in the world, including South Africa, the US, the UK, and all other countries, rely heavily on these intelligence gathering capabilities to defend their borders and keep their citizens safe. And so the question that then emanates is why are the same rights not accorded or afforded to Cuba? In conclusion, I wish to request you delegates to engage robustly but respectfully, so that the critical objective of emerging the action-oriented plan is achieved. But this is important because not only are we able to have opportunity to emerge with that plan, but we also then have a public forum for engagement on the issues that both our government and our parliament are dealing with on a daily basis. And so I want to take the opportunity to welcome all of you and wish this conference all the best in its work. And I hope, as I said, deliberations will be robust but respectful so that we meet our objectives last year. I want to reiterate what I said in one of the meetings, because all of us are in some way, well, let me put it to you this way. These three issues are issues that have the propensity to elicit a lot of emotion. We tend to become emotional about this issue on both sides of the fight. Right. Now, I want to make it absolutely clear that we cannot and will not tolerate behavior that is unbecoming. We might differ on any given issue, but essentially, this conference will not write policy. Its mandate is not to write policy for government or for the country. So we will not engage in new policy debates. Right. What we will essentially do is to say, within the space provided, how do we move and intensify our efforts? Now, we are beyond the debate about solidarity or not. That point, we are beyond it. I don't want us to engage and waste each other's time, distinguished delegates, about whether we should place solidarity or not. That is long beyond debate. Here it is about how we engage and intensify what we have agreed upon as a country. And so, indeed, the Committee and Parliament after adopting its own resolutions on this matter, on these matters. And so, I appeal to all of us to, even if we differ, that we differ respectfully, and that we are tolerant to divergent views, because this is essentially what we fought for. Right to be heard, even if we differ. Or perhaps I should say, especially when we differ. But besides that, I wish this conference all of the best, the committee wish the conference all of the best, and hope that we will meet our objectives. Now, perhaps I should, I'm just thinking, Chair, that perhaps I should, for those of you who might not have been at the previous meeting, so that at least there's a just a brief background. We had in one of the, I think it was a symposium, where we had quite not so orderly conduct, you know, because of the differences of opinion. And so, as the chair, I had to step in and maintain order. Now, so that's why I'm raising this issue. So that at least all of us are on par. The rules of Parliament apply to this event in terms of decor, in terms of behavior, and so on. But besides that, all of the best, and we wish you every success, that we wish ourselves every success in the way lying ahead for the day. Thank you so much.
Thank you, sir. I think we have laid the foundation, and I'm sure there are many who are itching to respond to your presentation. So we hold our horses until level 15 of the groups, as I will share our own understanding of the issue. Thank you, sir. I'll now call upon our Honorable Deputy Minister to come to the floor so that everybody can, and we appreciate that he has managed to be here. He has indicated upfront that he will be leaving sooner because he's called somewhere else. As he comes in, people are curious here to know these members of his committee who have called. Can my honourable members please stand, including the honourable Sigalaman? Thanks for coming. Honourable, the members of the committee of parliamentarians are here. Yeah. So that we do know as to who are the culprits who called this meeting. Thank you so much, honourable members. Over to you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson of this session, Honourable Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee and members of the committee, other members of Parliament, ambassadors, respected elders and Kamalima Katrada, Aboriginal in particular, members of civil society, ladies and gentlemen. I'm profoundly honoured to attend this august gathering on the occasion of this international parliamentary seminar with regard to Cuba, Western Sahara and Palestine, not only because these three countries have occupied such an important place in our discourse for just hearing and peaceful global dispensation, but because each in their own right have carried the flag of struggle for human rights, solidarity and freedom. On the eve of our own liberation in December 1993, our global icon, Comrade President Nelson Mandela, said in an article, I quote, "New Pillars for New World," he said the following, "As the 80s drew to a close, I could not see much of the world from a prison cell, but I knew it was changing. There was little doubt in my mind that this would have a profound impact on my country, on the Southern African region, and the continent, of which I am proud to be a citizen. Although this process of global change is far from complete, it's clear that all nations will have already recast their nets if they are to reap any benefits from international affairs in the post-Cold War era." Post quote. I think here that I want to appreciate the fact that the Portfolio Committee has pulled together such a particular engagement, because the world is ever changing, as the leader said then. The issues of the definitions and redefinitions of what one can consider human rights is starting to be a debate. If one in fact moves into international forum, you would pick up the interpretation of human rights by some and the interpretation of human rights by others. And therefore it is important that we, in our 20th year of our democracy, debate these issues and create a consistency in terms of a baseline of what these difficult issues is all about. I think I also want to indicate that at a global level, what we've started to pick up is a very serious question around what we would define as the politics of deception, the interpretation modeling of what we're experiencing on these particular issues. At some stage, some of us are quiet on it. This, therefore, is no coincidence as our emergence as a democratic country in the last decade of the 20th century has thrust us into a fundamentally transformed world. The Cold War has ended. The great contending forces of capitalism and socialism no longer dominate the world scene. A new era has dawned whose main content is, inter alia, the ever-growing conflict between a highly industrialized and affluent North and an impoverished, underdeveloped, highly populated South. More and more issues such as development, human rights, the environment, South-South cooperation, North-South relations, multilateralism, peace, security and disarmament, etc., is dominating the international agenda. Our response to these basic issues is fundamentally informed by the necessity to advance our common national interests in the first place, and secondly, to ensure that the South African region develops in conditions of peace, security and stability, and the larger end of African and international solidarity. Our foreign policy belongs to South Africa's people and mirrors our long relations with the international community, reflecting the rich tapestry of our international heritage and demonstrating the desire to live in harmony with our neighbors. This emphasizes our responsibility to contribute creatively to Africa's future and motivate us towards international service and solidarity. Such a profound premise for our foreign policy requires all of us, as patriotic South Africans, to think beyond the immediate, to reach towards the challenges of the approaching century, and to give full expression to the ideals of the Freedom Charter and a democratic constitution which proclaims a shall be peace and friendship. And I think here it's important that as we engage, as we debate, as we travel and traverse the globe, that we should consistently, from whichever persuasions, think about our utterances and how that does that impact on the national solidarity agenda, or does it impact negatively in terms of fragmentation of our various positions. South Africa has fully independent state to protect the life and the liberty of all nations. South Africa craft contains world peace and the settlement of all international dispute negotiations and not power. A democratic South Africa promotes peace and friendship among all people by upholding the standards of human rights, peace and justice. South Africa actively promotes the objectives of democracy, peace, stability, development and mutually beneficial relations, as well as pan-African solidarity. Our vision is an African continent which is prosperous, peaceful, democratic, non-racial, non-sexist and united. To this end, we have and will continue to pursue our strategic foreign policy objectives through bilateral and multilateral interactions to protect and promote African national interests and values, to monitor international developments and to advise governments on foreign policy and related domestic matters, to protect South Africa's sovereignty and territorial integrity, to contribute to the formulation of international law and enhance respect for the provisions thereof, as well as promoting multilateralism to secure a rule-based international system. And therefore, our principles of our policy is therefore enshrined in the following. Believe in a preoccupation with human rights, which extends beyond the political embracing, the economic, social and environmental. And therefore, we believe that international peace is the goal to which all nations should strive, where this breaks down international, agreed peaceful mechanisms to solve conflicts should be restored. And in restoring that, we also mean that there must be adherence to those international protocols. I think that's the strategic question that we need to confront. And how, on the one side, there's those nations that would argue protocols internationally, on the other side, they disrespect for those very similar protocols. Drawing from our own liberation history and its international solidarity charter, we pursue a foreign policy strategy of working with African and global progressive forces to advance human development in our country, our continent, and across the globe. It is therefore no accident that this seminar on international solidarity with the Western Sahara, Cuba, and Palestine occupies such an important place in our pursuit of our foreign relations policy. Freedom we now know would never have been had not been for the support built through international solidarity. Some supporting us with international aid, bursaries, training, others through multilateral lobbying, others with financial support in building a worldwide approach, as well as our internal anti-apartheid organizations and trade unions. Others helping through building the economic, cultural and sports boycotts, while others help us with the arms trail. International solidarity. Western Sahara. South Africa remains steadfast in its support for the Sahrawi people's inalienable right to decolonization and self-determination through a UN-supervised referendum with the option of independence. Western Sahara has since 1976 been occupied by the Kingdom of Morocco, and it is Africa's last remaining colony. The Kingdom of Morocco has maintained that an autonomous Western Sahara under Moroccan sovereignty is only acceptable solution. The Polisario Front proposed that the Sahrawi people should be allowed to determine
They texted me through a UN supervisor referendum. South Africa's support for the self-determination of Western Sahara is based on the following principles. The principles of multilateralism and international legality in seeking a just, lasting and mutually acceptable solution, which has to provide for the self-determination of the people of Western Sahara. The centrality of the African Union and the United Nations in the resolution of the conflict, the constructive acts of the African Union, in particular the principle of sanctity of inherited colonial borders, and the rights of people of former colonial territories to self-determination. Respect for international human rights in the occupied territory, notably as the right of freedom of association, assembly, movement and expression. Respect of international humanitarian law and support for the provision of humanitarian assistance to the Sahrawi refugees in a way that is predictable, sustainable and timely. And therefore, opposition is also an end to the illegal exploration and exploitation of the natural resources of Western Sahara in the illegally occupied territory and the discouragement of the involvement of foreign companies in such activities. The year 2014 marked 20 years of fruitful relations with Cuba. Times of culture, history, shared struggle and common aspirations join Cuba to South Africa and the continent of Africa. The celebration of 20 years of diplomatic bilateral relations between the two nations is a major achievement. In respect of the pursuit of international solidarity with Cuba, we have, as South Africa, signed over 30 bilateral agreements between the two countries, covering vast areas of cooperation, for example, culture, arts, defense, education, science and technology, health services, housing, as well as home affairs. And here I just want to say to the Cuban people, ambassador representing the Cuban society, many, many moons ago we walked in Cuba some 15 years ago, and what was very striking is that here you've got a community, you've got a society that is so ordinary. Poverty exists, underdevelopment, all the challenges, but a country with such pride even on the streets, the type of nation with the patriotism, the resolve to succeed. And I think we really have to give the Cuban society respect for the way they were able to sustain themselves through very many challenges. And also consistently thinking, and we've got our own challenges, but as we picked up in the Cuban society, as one engineer told me, that when they build the roads, as an engineer, I thought he was going to explain how they design these roads. The engineer told me, we are always building roads with a child in mind. And it was a quite striking point for me. So respect for children becomes very critical in the Cuban society. And I think the shared engagement and shared values, and we must discuss some of that in terms of the modeling of it. On the 1st of January 2014, we celebrated with the Cuban people the 55th anniversary of the Cuban Revolution. South Africa stands in wonder and admiration of the proficient leadership of President Fidel Castro and Raul Castro that has over more than 5 decades steered our sister country to survive all efforts to reverse the gains of the Cuban Revolution. Cuba's continuous economic oppression of the U.S. has failed to diminish the commitment of the Cuban government to provide for its people in education, health, and social development. Never has Cuba allowed its misery to shrink its limited solidarity to people's causes in all corners of the world. South Africa's strategic foreign policy objective towards growing of bilateral and multilateral relations with Cuba remains steadfast. We continue under the auspices of the South African-Cuba joint consultative mechanism to consolidate our political, bilateral and multilateral relations. South Africa will continue to energetically support all solidarity programs and activities that expose the tyranny and brutality of U.S. policy towards Cuba, and we commit to standing shoulder to shoulder with the Cuban people in their struggle against the U.S. economic embargo. Our country reports annually to the UN General Assembly on its cooperation with Cuba when considering the necessity of ending the economic, commercial and financial embargo imposed by the U.S. against Cuba. In this regard, President Jacob Zuma has, during the past number of years, in his State of the Nation address, called for an immediate end to continuous unilateral economic, commercial and financial embargo imposed against Cuba. As a country committed to defense of international law, South Africa will not down its efforts to demand the immediate and unconditional lifting of the embargo. We've seen as well a commitment to continue to actively campaign for the release of the remaining four of the given five who still remain in jail in the US today. And therefore we call also on a partnership between government and civil society organizations to ramp up our effort this year to support this campaign. In South Africa's hour of bereavement, when former President Nelson Mandela passed away on the 5th of December 2013, Cuba sent a high-level delegation to South Africa, presided over by General Raul Castro, first secretary of the Senate Committee of the Communist Party of Cuba, and the president of the councils of the state and ministers. And during that state funeral, he said the following, and I quote, "Full of emotion, we paid tribute to Nelson Mandela. We recognize as the supreme symbol of dignity and unyielding dedication to the revolutionary struggle for freedom and justice, as a process of unity, reconciliation and peace. We shall never forget Mandela's moving tribute to our common struggle when he visited us on the 26th of July 1991 and stated, the Cuban people hold a special place in the hearts of the people of Africa." We've seen many progress and many bilaterals, amongst others during this year, more than 1,828 South African students will be receiving medical training in Cuba. So far, more than 420 South Africans from disadvantaged backgrounds have graduated in Cuba as medical doctors, providing much-needed primary health care services to their local communities. Another 73 final-year medical students are doing their final year at South African universities and will be graduating in 2014. Similarly, 11 South African students have graduated from the International Sports School in Havana, and a number of teachers in South Africa have benefited from the mathematics and science skills development program. And here what we've seen is out of nine provinces, one province has in fact refused to implement a program when it comes to the health practitioners, and we potentially will be calling also on this committee to in fact engage the committees dealing with teachers as well as with the health portfolios in Parliament and through the NCOP to reflect on how ordinary people and ordinary communities within the Western Cape also be able to benefit from this program. Now, knowing what you know about the difficulty and the challenges in the Cuban society in terms of the embargo, but still are able to, at least with 1,800 young people from across South Africa, go and study. And as the Cuban leadership told them again many years ago, they said they will support them when they are there. The only condition that Cuba is expecting of those students is to go back from the villages where they came from and to give excellent healthcare facility support in those villages in South Africa. And therefore we must support this program, and hopefully one of the areas out of this engagement can be that all of us in the South African Parliament can give support to this initiative. We've also seen the deployment of doctors, engineers and technical experts, and there's programs between the National Department of Public Works with different provincial departments as well as the Department of Human Settlements in terms of this particular exchange. Cuba's commitment to the African continent is evident by the presence of Cuban medical brigades in 28 African countries. Approximately at least 1,800 doctors and close to 2,300 young people from 48 countries all studying in Cuba. Finally, we applaud the Cuban government for its plans announced in January 2014 to open its economy to greater foreign investments under a new law to be taken up soon by its legislature. We have noted with great satisfaction and anticipation the statement released by the government of Cuba that outside investment is no longer to be seen merely as a complement to Cuba's economy, but it would occupy a major role under the proposed law. Our best wishes, therefore, with the Cuban government as it finds measures to open up the economy to outside investment and attract greater foreign capital, thus generating new jobs and bolstering domestic industry. This step will assist Cuba to increase its exports and reduce its dependence on goods purchased from overseas. This, in my view, emphasize the scope for doing business with Cuba and critical part of the parliamentary plan of action to grow trade with Cuba. I'm also glad to state that 2014 is the year of implementation of the economic assistance package agreement in favor of Cuba. The agreement signed in 2012 became fully operational before the end of 2013, and approval has been granted by the South African Reserve Bank for the package to be delivered through the conduct of a series of international payments. And here we must commend the various portfolio committees, this particular portfolio committee, portfolio committee of trade and industry, as well as the departments and other departments, and to indicate that for 15 months and more ago, there was in fact a delay in the handing over of that money. And what we picked up is the financial systems behind the scenes, internationally playing themselves out to create documents. And I think what we have to do at the level of the portfolio committee, and this engagement will help, is to ensure that we create in that action and the protocols for our bilateral relations, in particular with countries like Cuba, and the type of blockages that we see behind the sea, so that we don't have institutions of the South African government playing into that hypocritical approach in the international society, and that we need to be able to deal with, and at all senior levels of management, they must adhere to that. Ladies and gentlemen, Cuba continues to be an inspiration for us in pursuit of our agenda of international solidarity. First Commandant de Che Guevara reiterated, and I quote, "Our struggle cannot be over as long as there is a single human being suffering anywhere in the world." On the issue of Palestine, Commander Nelson Mandela put our foreign policy and international solidarity with the Palestinian struggle in perspective when he said, and I quote, "The Palestinian struggle is the greatest moral issue of our time. The strategic question is, what do we do with that? How do we deal with that in the international forum? How do we deal with it in parliament? And how do we deal with it when different political parties engage at the international front on this matter? Our history and support for the Palestinian struggle for freedom is one that is also linked in our historical and shared struggles. And the chairperson has raised quite a few of those points which I will not go into. But I can say that South Africa, since the year 1995, has recognized the state of Palestine. Not so long ago, 2-3 years ago internationally, was a lot of lobbying to and fro. And we've seen how 2 or 3 countries of the world can block positions of the United Nations when it comes to the overwhelming majority of nations of this globe has put for the fact of that recognition. And hence, part of our discussion has to deal with the reforms of global institutions, including institutions like the United Nations, so that no 1 or 2 or 3 countries can veto issues affecting human rights, because we've seen over the last couple of years the silence when it comes to the Palestinian question by some, but in the same way speaking about human rights abuses in another country. And I think that is what we call the type of hypocrisy that we see when it comes to human rights issues. We therefore, during the non-aligned movement ministerial meeting in Egypt on the 10th of May 2012, our Minister Nkwana Mashabane reiterated South Africa's unwavering commitment and support of the Palestinian cause and call for the self-determination. South Africa stands also firmly opposed to the blockade of Gaza, its inaccessibility with respect to humanitarian aid, and the general dire humanitarian situation. In 2011, South Africa co-sponsored a bid for statehood in the United Nations. However, that, as I said, was not successful. In 2013, the General Assembly voted to grant Palestine non-member observer state status at the United Nations. On the 22nd of August 2012, the South African Cabinet approved Government Notice 379 pertaining to the labouring of products from the Palestinian occupied territories. The Israeli government was distressed by the fact that the entire South African Cabinet had approved a notice requiring the labouring of products emanating from the occupied territories. Our foreign policy implementation and international solidarity can therefore be summarized as using all our resource tools and tactics of diplomacy to enhance and support the cause of the Palestinian people. And here we want to say that we believe that the issue of the Palestinian community and its right for self-determination and independence and its complete sovereignty in accordance with the international resolutions of the UN, we have to continue in a steadfast way about that. We've heard in the South African discourse a debate around the occupied territories and is what happening there, is it in fact worth an apartheid, is it not worth an apartheid? It's only if you see the brutal attacks on children, the brutal attacks on elders, the brutal attacks on people within the Palestinian community, that we in fact can realize that we need so. It's even worse than what a pastor has experienced. And therefore we call on all those leadership at all political fronts to in a sense, delve very deep into this particular issue. In conclusion, let me reiterate our support to the Petroleum Committee for the initiative taken to hold this workshop. As we celebrate our 20th year of democracy, it becomes therefore important to reflect on the successes and challenges of the past 2 decades, including within the field of international relations and international solidarity. So therefore we hope that the outcomes of this discussion can also enrich the South African engagement when it comes to what's required over the next 10 to 20 to 30 years in terms of our outlook internationally, but also our outlook domestically. The balance between what is happening globally with what is happening within the South African borders, and how do we link the debate on solidarity with the debate on underdevelopment, the debate on poverty, the debate on unemployment, because those are the three real issues that in the South African environment we are confronted with. So we hope that the discussion here, Jefferson, would be as fruitful and as the Department of International Relations and Cooperation. We are looking forward to some of the outcomes so that we can see what are the areas that we still need to strengthen in terms of our own mandate, so that indeed so we can take the views, the aspirations of our people in the context of solidarity for it to a next level. With that, we want to thank you.
Thank you. I've been instructed by Honorable Elof not to tell thank you, that what he will be doing again. Could I, as I've allowed these first two speakers, one representing the legislature and the president, to go beyond the time located, I would appreciate if the next speaker can allow me, not allow them. I'm looking at our time. We, according to our time, the town now is about 9:35, and Honorable Jobs Tony is going to be addressing us. As he comes to make the presentation, I would like to instruct my chair in solidarity with his members to come this way. Come back from Chuba and join the members this time. Welcome. So, starting from him, he has allowed me not to allow him to go beyond his enemy. Go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Chair. I agree with you that please don't allow me to go beyond 10 minutes, because if you do, I may take the whole time for the conference. But Chair, I must first say that I'm so grateful that I participate in this seminar, and say to the Chair of the Committee that it's a well-structured intervention at this hour, that we look at ourselves and consider how do we move forward in terms of solidarity. And just to say that the struggle for a better life is not only confined to the development of our own society, The struggle for a better life is a struggle for humanity. It's a struggle for everybody, whether in South Africa or anywhere in the world, to create a better life for them to live in. Building a better world is not only building it as we interact economically with our counterparts, but it's to create a life that all of us as citizens, we can be able to live in peace and coexist in our diversity and our differences. South Africa benefited a lot from the international solidarity. Ordinary citizens, ordinary students, ordinary workers sacrificed to make sure that our state comes to an end. Some of them, they've never been in South Africa. Some of them heard about our suffering and they put themselves up to fight and make sure that we become a free people. Why is it that when it's our turn to do the same, to put our lives on the line to support those who are oppressed and occupied, we tend to debate whether it's right for us to do that or not right for us to do that? Why is it that when everybody wanted to sanction South Africa, we all stood up and say yes to sanction? And when today we debate whether Israel should be sanctioned, we are told that we should be sensitive. Why are we sensitive? Why is it that we are told that those who continue to exploit the resources that are supposed to be benefited by the Western Sahara people and Morocco continue to exploit those resources for its own benefit, that we find it morally justifiable to deal with Morocco and arrange trade arrangements to eat the fish that belongs to the Western Sahara people? Why is it correct? Yes, I agree, Jefferson, that we should be not talking about whether we need solidarity or not. We should be saying, what are we going to do? What is it that must be done? We are told by those that have power that as and when that those who violate human rights and commit crimes of humanity, against humanity, are taken to the ICC, but we do not hear that Israel leadership or the Moroccan leadership is taken to the ICC. Why do we hear such a different silence? Why do we hear that those who possess nuclear weapons or possess the capability to develop nuclear weapons must be made to take responsibility and be sanctioned, but we never hear that on Israel, nor do we hear that on Morocco? Why is it? Is it because as human beings we speak on our tongues, or is it because we are the net beneficiaries of the suffering of the Palestinians? We are the net beneficiaries of the suffering of the Western Sahara people. Why is it that we find it correct that every time that young people in Gaza take up the struggle, we want to argue that they must be killed because they threw one rocket that also missed all its target and landed on the middle of the road, but they have to suffer and die for that rocket? Why is it like that? Is it because they fund us? Is it because they provide material resources for our political parties? Is it because we benefit from the brutality that they exercise on the Palestinian, the Western Sahara people, that makes us look good when we sit in our positions of power? These are fundamental questions that we need to be asking. Cuba has survived. Despite all the blockage that Cuba has gone through, Cuba has survived. And in the days that some of us were young, used to sing a song that says, we thank the Cubans for what they've done for us. Because the Cubans stood firm in support of the liberation and those who were oppressed, despite the fact that they had nothing, despite the fact that they were far away from us, but they stood firm against the oppressed and the poor. Why are we not South Africans being seen on the streets, raising our hands and raising our flags and saying, enough is enough? I hear people say that Israel is an apartheid Israel. I've been in Israel many times. I've been in Palestine many times. I've been in Gaza many times. To me, it's worse than apartheid. If apartheid is anything against humanity and it's a crime against humanity, what Israel is doing to Palestinians is 20 times worse than what we've observed. during apartheid you will not be stopped for driving on the freeway only because you are black. In Israel, a Palestinian will not drive on the road purely because it's Palestinian. Now, is that it can be equated to apartheid? I think it's worse. Can the Sahrawi people be allowed to live their lives? Can Morocco accept the fact that Western Sahara is not part of Morocco and that it adheres to the rules of engagement agreed by the United Nations? Can Morocco stop moving the ball, post every time that there's a progress that has been made, unless we push and unless we stand firm and say to Morocco, in an African country, we will not allow you to continue to oppress another African. We need to stand firm, we need to say that. And in those issues, Jefferson, as I conclude, I want to say that the few issues that I say we should be considering, one, is that we should really consider very seriously to identify products that emanate from occupied areas, whether it's from Palestine or from Morocco held Western Sahara, identify those products and clearly take a decision. I'm aware that our government took a decision that says we should label them, but take a decision as citizens that we will not buy them. That we become very conscious about. It's not an accidental issue that happens, but we take a clear-cut decision that says we will not buy them. We need leadership on that aspect. We need to be firm on that aspect. We need to say to all government officials that we affirm the view that says we should not interact with Morocco so long as it continues to occupy the territories of Western Sahara. We should say to our government, we should not interact with Israel so long as we continue to kill with impunity Palestinians. We should say that to our leadership in parliament and political parties in parliament, that we should not interact with Israel. I'm aware that I'm raising this, and of course some of us are funded by these very same institutions, and we find it morally difficult to accept the fact that we should say no to the payer. We should say to raise with our cultural workers that it's not in our interest to continue to participate in cultural activities that are organized by either Morocco or Israel. That the people in Israel have the right to interact with the world, but their government has denied them that right. We have the responsibility to free Israelites themselves against the oppression that is exercised by their own government. And so therefore, we should say no to that. We should identify companies in South Africa that have arrangements with Israel and Morocco, whether at the level of shareholding, whether at the level of product or any other level, and say to South Africans, these are companies that support the oppression and the killing of Western Sahara people. These are companies that are killing the Palestinians in Gaza and West Bank. And be able to say to those companies and to our people, every day you buy that product, you contribute to the death of an innocent child that is hit by a guided missile that is launched against the Palestinian poor. We need to say to the Western Sahara people, we are with you, the Cuban people, for all what you've done for us today and yesterday. We say thank you.
Thank you very much. That was Mr. Jobs told in your program. Yes, you think that is the Deputy Minister Robert Papela. That was, thanks for that. We'll cross over now to our icon. Icon Ahmed Kazak, please could take the floor.
This person inviting us here. One of the things we learned after we came out of prison is all protocol observed. I want to start off by saying that how the Madiba was released from prison, he was advised by President Bush to break all ties with Cuba, with the coffee and with a payload. Madhiva's response was, it would be ungrateful and immoral of us to now abandon those people who were our friends here in Osama. The other thing I want to say is that unfortunately, when we criticize Israel, mischievous people misinterpret that as anti-Semitism. So I want to emphasize that we will keep on criticizing Israel, but we are not anti-Semitic. Last year, my colleague Sean and I visited Palestine. What we saw there was a country that is the last colony in the world, colony of Israel. What we saw there, what has already been alluded to, the road on which Palestinians could not walk. We saw the high wall that separated Israel from the West Bank. We saw these checkpoints guarded by heavily armed soldiers. And we saw the ongoing settlements on the West Bank. In the world days of apartheid, we did not see these things. And I'm not trying to say apartheid was good. But we did not see these roads for whites only. We didn't see the walls. We didn't see the checkpoints. What we saw there was a reminiscence of South Africa under apartheid. We didn't have to do academic research to conclude that Israel is an apartheid state. Now, fortunately, yesterday I was reading a book. I discovered that we are not the originators of accusing Israel as an apartheid state. In fact, it was none other than a friend of Israel who put it in the London Daily Mail of 23rd of November 1961. And this gentleman could not believe why some leaders in Israel criticized separate development. He further observed that Zionists, and I quote, took Israel from the Arabs after the Arabs have lived there for thousands of years. In that, I agree with them. Israel, like South Africa, is an apartheid state. The words, these words that I have quoted, come from none other than the late Minister Hendrik Verwoerd. The British ambassador to Israel, Mr. Cole, said after a tour of Israel, tour of the West Bank, described Palestine as the largest detention camp in the world. This is not what we are saying. These are very knowledgeable people who have said this. The state of Israel and the South African apartheid regime came into power in 1948. And South Africa was among the first countries, apartheid South Africa, was among the first countries in the world to recognize Israel. And the Prime Minister, the then Prime Minister of South Africa, Dr. Malan, was among the first leaders of a country to pay an official visit to Israel. Now, why should we be supporting the struggle of the Palestinian people. I can only re-quote what has already been said by Madiba. South Africa, I quote, is proud to be part of the international consensus affirming the right of the Palestinians to self-determination and statehood. We know too well that our freedom is incomplete without the freedom of the people of Palestine. I'm observing what the chairperson has said. Of course, one can go on and on, but fortunately for me, the previous speakers have spoken about what I'm saying now. I want to just conclude by saying that when we met people in Israel, every second or third person that we met has been a prisoner of Israel. We served 27 or 26 years in prison. There we met people who served over 30 years and more, men and women. Now, last year, we launched on Northern Ireland a campaign with the presence of people from Israel, a whole delegation, a whole delegation from Palestine, launched a campaign which we hope will be an international campaign for the freedom of the most senior Palestine leader, who was already in prison for 11 years, but his sentence is 5 life sentences. His name is Marwan Barghouti. And we launched the campaign on Robben Island for the freedom of Marwan Barghouti, for the freedom of 5,000 Palestinians who are still in Israeli jail. And we hope that this will develop into an international campaign, like we had the Free Mandela campaign, an international campaign for the freedom of all Palestinian prisoners who incidentally were not necessarily tried by civilian courts, but most of them were tried by military courts in Israel. With those, I want to thank you again for allowing me to share a few words with you. Thank you very much.
We shall now cross over to the statement from the ambassadors of the different countries. I'm told we do have an ambassador from Juba, Palestine, and Western Sahara is represented by Elmami Brahim. I have been given about 11 minutes each. I'm not going, if you could come one after the other, just take your time, say what you have to say, and then the next one, starting from Cuba, Palestine, Land, Israel. Come on. This is Algeria. Oh, I'm from Japan. Oh, that reduces your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Allow me to start by joining others in recognizing Comrade Ahmed Kadra and the pleasure of having him here with us. Comrade Kadra is an icon, as has been said here, and his history, his prestige and his authority overcome South Africans' version. I would say go to every corner of the world, and that, of course, includes Cuba. We believe it is a great honor for us to be sharing with him this hall and this session, above all, where we're speaking of something so sacred as solidarity. I would like also to recognize Deputy Minister Fransman. I appreciate his words. The ambassador present here, the officials from the Department of International Relations and Cooperation, of course, the members of Parliament, and to thank them for this opportunity, and all the friends, comrades, and South Africans that are present here today. Among the many values that identify my country with South Africa lies our common and firm belief in the right of the people of Western Sahara for a fair and definitive solution to the rightful claim of independence. We share the demand for a referendum on the question of self-determination in conformity with relevant resolutions of the UN General Assembly and the Security Council. The difficult living conditions of the Sahrawi people are worsening by day. Basic needs like nutrition, drinking water, shelter and sanitation are scarce in refugee camps, while international humanitarian aid is dropping instead of increasing. The people of Western Sahara deserve our solidarity, and they will require great sympathy from all of us to overcome their immense challenge. Cuba's commitment and solidarity with people of Western Sahara is unbending and firm. We also share with South Africa a common position in claiming the right of the Palestine to live in peace in a united and unoccupied state. I would like to take this opportunity to reaffirm Cuba's unequivocal solidarity with the people of Palestine and our firm and determined support to all efforts aimed at promoting the recognition of the Palestinian state upon the borders existing prior to 1967 and with Eastern Jerusalem as its capital, as well as the right of Palestine to become a full member state of the United Nations. The numerous resolutions of the UN that demand the withdrawal of Israel from the occupied territories must be implemented. We demand the end of such occupation and of the illegal, brutal, and inhumane blockade of Gaza. We condemn the shameful war that isolates and segregates entire communities and the imprisonment of Palestinian people whose only crime is to want to live in a sovereign land. The people of Cuba hold and will continue to cherish an unwavering gratitude to South Africa for its sustained solidarity with our nation and with the Cuban Revolution. Those sentiments were upheld by late Nelson Mandela and sustained by ex-presidents Thabo Mbeki and Kgalema Motlanthe. They have been firmly reiterated by President Jacob Zuma and embraced in repeated manifestations and declarations of the ANC, the South African Communist Party, COSAT, the Friends of Cuba Society, and multiple organizations and individuals of this nation. They have an immense meaning and play a valuable contribution to Cuba's difficult struggle to protect and defend its independence and its right to live in a better world. We attach particular significance to South Africa's reiterated demand for an end to the economic blockade imposed by the United States against Cuba and the release of the Cuban five heroes that suffered unjust imprisonment in the United States. The economic blockade, which year after year is rejected by the international community almost unanimously, is a unilateral act of economic warfare that has severely punished the Cuban nation and its people for over 50 years. As documented by the UN, the blockade is not simply the prohibition of trade between Cuba and the United States. It involves a comprehensive set of laws and regulations and policies that go after Cuba's international trade and economic relations in every part of the world. The impact on the economy is overwhelming. It is a policy based on the perverse notion of trying to subdue an entire nation by generating famine, destitution, and misery. The support and sustained support of South Africa is very valuable for Cuba in demand for its end. The other gesture of South African solidarity, which is so clear to the people of Cuba, is a demand ratified by the ANC just a month ago for the release of a Cuban five. This is a very sensitive case that involves a gross abuse of legality and that fails acute political and legal considerations, and yet it is insufficiently known and poorly understood in most parts of the world. It refers to the plight of five Cubans that were arrested in 1998 and convicted after 17 months in solitary confinement. I'll repeat the figure, 17 months in solitary confinement in one of the, and were convicted in one of the longest and most controversial trials in the U.S. history. most people would ask, who are they? And wish where they are crimes. These are Cubans that were sent to the United States to learn about organizations and individuals that in the 1990s operated undisturbed from U.S. territories to carry out terrorist actions in Cuba, targeting mainly hotels, airports, and facilities linked to tourism, which caused injuries to many people, the life of one international and Italian tourist, and of course, material damage. They were arrested in 1998 upon minor charges of unregistered or failure to register as agents of foreign government and false documentation. Yet after 17 months in solitary confinement, the charges were changed and made new charges of conspiracy to commit espionage and conspiracy to commit murder were raised. They were tried in Miami in an environment totally hostile where it is impossible to achieve a fair trial and fair conclusions in an atmosphere of hostility against Cuba, in a city where terrorism is celebrated many times, and with a jury comprised mainly of people influenced by the anti-Cuban atmosphere. This was known by the judge, it was known by the prosecution, and it was questioned by the defense, and yet the trial took place. On the basis of the minor initial charges and the vague charge, unsubstantiated, unproved in trial, these five Cubans were sentenced with huge convictions. Three of them with life sentences and two of them with 17 to 19 years in jail. This was a gross abuse question in 2005 by an appeals court, the Atlanta Court of Appeals in the U.S., which in a unanimous decision by a panel of three judges considered that there should be a mid-trial because it was impossible in the conditions where they were tried, in the atmosphere of Miami, with the role played by the media, with the inadequacies of the actions of the prosecution and the government to have a fair trial. Yet this ruling of the appeals court was overturned 1 year later in a divided decision by the whole panel of appeals court. The fact is that after 16 years, four of these men remain in jail. Practically all the legal avenues have been followed, almost reaching a dead end because they've been exhausted. The terrorists that they were following in the organizations continue to live undisturbed in southern Florida. And only a political action by the President of the United States could make a difference. And it is within the prerogatives of President Obama to act. He will not do it unless he's compelled to. Political pressure must be built within the United States and by the international community. And South Africans know this well because of their history. He must be compelled to act and to do the right thing, to put an end to this injustice, to put an end to the suffering of these men and their families, and to release them as soon as possible. All the solidarity that Cuba could receive in this subject will be crucial to us, and we fully, I want to say it again, thank the people of South Africa, the government of South Africa, and the organization, political organizations in this country for this great support. Thank you very much.
I cannot overemphasize the vital importance of active support in the line towards establishing an independent Palestinian state, particularly active international solidarity. During the apartheid era, international solidarity for local South African people played a permanent role in collapsing an equitas regime. The international sanctions on South Africa and the severe international humiliation of the regime assisted in putting intense pressure on the powerless system by isolating the apartheid state, forcing it to fear toward a just democratic alternative. The Palestinian situation is no different in this regard. The Palestinians are undoubtedly an oppressed group that maintains strength and power through control of them and policies go unmatched compared to Israel. Thus, there is no way Israel will surrender to peace through equality when they have the upper hand. Instead, they need to pressure to do so through peaceful and crippled pressure initiated by international community and possibly by South Africa. Ladies and gentlemen, in fact, I strongly believe South Africa will be leading a prayer in the path of our Palestinian freedom. This is because our two countries have a long trend history due to our shared experiences of fighting for self-determination. This reaches a sense of understanding and union between our nations. Moreover, our countries are also tied through shared values. Thus, the relationship between our two countries is in fact quite unique, as our alliance is not solely based on strategy or political gains, but rather on moral and the principle of indiscriminate freedom, justice, and equality. These shared principles are the rules that have built our honorable friendship. Dear comrades, we Palestinians have also been fortunate enough to have gained not only South Africa's support, but South Africa's iconic father and leader support, our brave and beloved Nelson Mandela. May his soul rest in peace, and his loyalty and passion for Palestinian cause live on. Nelson Mandela was exceptionally strong, wise, brave, and a principled leader that established a negative friendship with Palestinian iconic leader that led Gaza Arafat. Despite political pressures on distance himself from Arafat and the Palestinian cause, nonetheless, Mandela refused to let politics shake his principles. In fact, in 1990, Mandela was accused of taking an immoral stand due to his affiliation with Arafat and Palestinian during the New York Town Hall meeting with Ted Koppel. Yet Mandela stood firm by replying, anybody who changes his principles dealing with whom he is dealing with, that is not a man who can lead a nation. This is an incredible statement that wisdom runs deep. Sisters and brothers, this statement stands as a compass of morality. Anyone who claims he or she supports freedom, justice and equality should do so without discrimination and should thus support the freedom, justice and equality Palestinians are aiming to achieve. Moreover, if one opposes occupation, that person should stand in opposition to Israeli's occupation of Palestinian lands. This brings me to the point of occupation. The growing illegal Israeli occupation of Palestinian lands in the West Bank is one of the major issues that is threatening any hope for genuine peace, even beyond them. Moreover, Israel continues to establish illegal Israeli settlement on the occupied Palestinian territories, thus suggesting a permanent nature of their occupation. How can feasible Palestinian state even be established if it consists of a scattered chunk of disconnected lands? The occupation is only adding fuel to the fire, and this fire is burning down the prospect of even achieving two-state solution. Comrades, the realization of Jerusalem was as another commanding to the two-state solution. Jerusalem is a permanent holy city that is home to all three major religions, Christianity, Judaism, and Islam. Nonetheless, Israel is in the active process to unite Jerusalem by establishing a Jewish majority in the city. This is unacceptable, as by doing so Israel gains further control over the holy city while simultaneously resisting access to control the remaining place. It has also been publicly acknowledged that Jerusalem would be the capital of future Palestinian state. Israel is in the process to judge Jerusalem, thus supporting the prospect of peace. This prospect is set back even further by the growing illegal Israeli settlements, not only in Jerusalem, but throughout the West Bank. In fact, today there is more than 600,000 Israeli settlers in the West Bank and Jerusalem. Such realities, because happening, however, peace can still prevail. When we stand together in solidarity, we can overcome any challenge and any oppression. The greater the international solidarity, the easier the victory. Ladies and gentlemen, there are several peaceful solidarity tactics we can employ to achieve such victory. Firstly, we should internationally unite our voices to proclaim that the occupation is illegal and that we must stand together to collapse it. Secondly, we must actively participate in the international boycott of Israeli settlement and encourage others to follow suit. Optimistic steps have been already taken by Norway, Netherlands, Spain, Britain, France, and other European countries. Such boycotts are also expected to increase this year as the National Palestinian Agenda marks 2040 as the year of ending the occupation. The agenda also marks this year as the Palestinian year for a greater ties with the African continent. Lastly, as another tactic, I personally encourage every single one of you to give this a Palestine. Go witness the reality. Go witness the reality of the situation firsthand. Go meet up with the pro-Palestinian and personally offer you support for their cause. Go to Jerusalem and visit Al-Aqsa Mosque or Church of Nativity in Bethlehem. Otherwise, simply go experience Palestinian life and culture, such as assess Palestinian roadways and exposure. Moreover, we will bring the Palestinian cause to the forefront of international agendas and help the international community push for rights and Palestinian of the Palestinian people. A push of this is not in need. Therefore, I once again encourage you to visit Palestine. So far, members of the African delegation have managed to visit the Palestinian territories. However, we hope to increase this number as well as increase the rate of their visits. The Palestinian government, organization, and people who come all to Palestine and are ready to assist where possible. Dear comrades, I thank you all for attending this conference, and I hope that such conferences will spread throughout this beautiful democratic country. Finally, I would like to wish you, all South Africans, the very best for the upcoming national election. I trust that you will once again teach the world how to practice their rights of democracy. And I pray we live witness the first participation of a free in the land of Palestine, the Algerian state. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir, for giving me the floor. Mr. President, Tiso Mogama, Mr. Deputy Minister of the International Relations and Cooperation, honorable members of the Commission of International Relations and Cooperation of the Parliament of South Africa, ambassadors, distinguished guests, friends from Cuba and Palestine, ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of the Polisario Front and Sahrawi people, I would like to express my sincere gratitude to the Parliament for its continued interest in the issue of Western Sahara and the just cause of its people, which is unanimous among the political forces in representation here today. Ladies and gentlemen, between South Africa and Western Sahara, there have been a long-standing story of solidarity, mutual assistance and cooperation, forged during the years of our liberation struggle for freedom and dignity and against colonial oppression. Our South African brothers and sisters have already known how to honor those historical relations. By fulfilling their commitments and applying the principles and objectives of the Charter of the African Union and the United Nations, South Africa and the Harare Republic established diplomatic relations on the 15th of September 2004. From then onwards, South Africa has continued to support the Sahrawi cause, constantly reaffirming their support for the inalienable rights of the Sahrawi people's self-determination, according to the international law and the multiple resolutions of the African Union and the United Nations. Within the context of the excellent bilateral relations between our two countries, three agreements were signed in June last year on diplomatic consultation, youth, and assistance for the demining of the territory, as well as on humanitarian aid to the Sahrawi refugees that still live in a crushed condition in exile due to the non-solution of the conflict. South Africa's solidarity towards our people has also had its effect on one area of great significance and of critical importance, the area of arts and culture. A group of South African actors, producers and writers have been participating for the last 4 years in Kitahra, the first international film festival held in the refugee camp. As a result, we have the first African documentary about the Western Sahara issue, the producer of which is here with us today, Mil Mwabe. While your government, your people, and your institution have taken sides with the justice and the law, Western Sahara is still lamentably the last colony in Africa in the 21st century. And the Sahrawi people continue to be divided in two realities, one as bad as the other. Thousands of Sahrawi civilians continue to live in the refugee camps in difficult conditions, and this situation persists today after 35 years. The other half lives in occupied territory controlled by 200,000 soldiers and a defensive wall as large as the China Wall of approximately 5 million of landmines, and is constantly subjected to human rights violations such as kidnapping, enforced disappearance, torture, rape, imprisonment without trial, military trials of civilians and human rights activists. This besides the ongoing illegal exploitation of the territory's natural resources in flagrant violation of the Sahrawi people's sovereignty and in complicity with governments and companies of the other countries. We have the example of the recently signed fish agreement between Morocco and the European Union, which include waters of West Sahara. In view of this situation, we call upon all organizations, institutions, and defenders of freedom, democracy, human rights, and progress to assume ethical, political, and historical responsibilities, and for them to contribute efficiently to breaking the siege imposed by Morocco in the occupied territory. We also request the access to META, international observers and human rights organization, is ensured that the exploitation of the resource comes to an end. More efforts are required to oblige the Moroccan regime to respect the will of the international community and to allow the decolonization of the last colony in Africa, leaving the Sahrawi people to exercise their right to freedom and independence. In this regard, human rights mechanism should be assumed by the United Nations mission in Western Sahara, MINURSO, the only mission in the world that have not mandate on monitoring the human rights issue. Could I not finish my intervention without expressing my solidarity with our friends of Palestine, and also to express my gratitude to Cuba, a formidable example of solidarity. Ambassador, I did this regard in a book. I'm a product of the Cuban solidarity. I spent 12 years in Cuba with thousands of Sahrawi children in Cuba, and at the end, we are doctors, we are engineers, we are lawyers, and we pass our country to build the future. Also, I want to express and salute the film and historical support of the Greek Algeria, who hosted the refugee camp and support politically and diplomatically, economically, Western Sahara and the border front. And also, thank you, Mr. Ambassador of Algeria. Finally, and once again, I would like to take this opportunity to express in the name of the Sahrawi people our deep gratitude to the people and government of South Africa for supporting our rights, self-determination, independence, and human dignity. And thank you.
We now invite Algeria.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, first of all, I would like to salute the presence of high officials of South Africa, honorable parliamentarians. I would like to salute also particularly the presence of Comrade Dr. Katanda. For us as Algeria, South Africa is a depository of the moral values of Pan-Africanism in the sense of liberation of Africa, the respect of the right to self-determination of the African peoples under occupation or colonialism. And in this symbol, and Dr. Katanda is personifying this statute of South Africa as depository of this Pan-Africanist values. Mr. Chairman, I would like to extend my deep thanks to the Portfolio Committee on International Relations and Cooperation of the Parliament of the Republic of South Africa and its chairperson, Mr. Magama, for organizing this conference in support of the peoples of Palestine, Western Sahara, and Cuba. And I would like to express my gratitude to be invited to this important event. Of course, South Africa and Algeria will support these three peoples in a principled position, as I am invited to make my intervention on the Western Sahara people. I shall talk more about these people. This event is for us an act of solidarity, aiming to inform again about the situation of the broader people of Western Sahara. As I said in the beginning, for us as Algerians, it's a natural initiative. Since South Africa succeeded thanks to its heroic struggle against injustice and discrimination, as well as the legacy of the late Nelson Mandela, South Africa succeeded in engraving its name on the list of countries actually fond of the values of human freedom and dignity. This is also the expression of the noble commitment of the citizens of America to the promotion of defense.
the just and right focus on all activities and consumers. And I am pleased to tell you in this context that Algerians of Africa were and continue
to be too partners sincerely and resolutely committed to principles and actions for the defense of legitimate aspiration of people for freedom and dignity. When I was listening to the declarations of the South African brothers, I was listening, hearing in fact what any Algerian could say. We share absolutely the same vision, the same principles, the same values. This is due to the history. Even when we call our leaders, you find exactly the same declarations. One, the late Madiba said that we shall be free once the whole African continent will be free. President, the late President Bibela almost exactly the same sentence. This is just to tell you how we are on the same historical path. And I am sure, because this position is based on very solid foundation and principles, and the laws, we shall continue like this. Chairperson, the other people of Western Sahara, whose legitimate demands were recognized by the international community, only some years after the adoption of the United Nations General Assembly Resolution 1514 of 1960, on the right of people to self-determination, for which the sacrifices of the Algerian people struggling for its own independence were a catalyst, is still robbed and denied by the Moroccan occupation since almost 40 years. Next year it will be 40 years. Being an issue of decolonization, it should be reiterated that the territory of Western Sahara was put since the early of 1960s on the list of non-autonomous territories, and as such, according to international law, should give the rights to the people of Western Sahara to enjoy precisely the right to self-determination. Being generous and peaceful, the people of Western Sahara took up arms against the Spanish and Moroccan colonialism to claim its inalienable rights. After that, he accepted also to pursue the way of peaceful dialogue by adhering to the 1991 settlement plan and signing the 1997 Houston Agreement. Despite this faithful and courageous decision, the people of Western Sahara still remain under foreign protection, unfortunately, by an African country. Its territory is also the last colony in Africa. This is very important. South Africa and Algeria, we refuse the consequences, the philosophy of the Congress of Berlin of the end of the 19th century. Of course, we refuse that a reshuffled new Congress of Berlin one century later by another African country to be imposed to an African people. It is obvious that the occupying force of the Western Sahara is solely motivated by the will to impose the accomplished fact, le fait accompli, by seeking to win time and being convinced that it will succeed to kill the spirit of resistance of the Sahrawi people by mastering that reducing it to silence. Despite the brutal and constant repression it undergo by the same occupying authority, the Sahara population which lives in the occupied territories is still braving with extraordinary determination and courage all the dangers and crying out loud and clear. The Algerian and South African peoples, who particularly measures the historical experience of resistance and the revolution, know that a people aspiring to wrest its legitimate rights will succeed whatever the price will be. It is one of the precious lessons and values drawn by our two peoples from their own historical path, which they defend and honor faithfully by supporting struggling peoples. Chairperson, everyone of us could see the repression of the Sahrawi people in the occupied territories with its share of human rights violation. Every one of us would also watch the Sahrawi youth facing this repression by the hands and convictions. The well-known militant Aminatou Haider showed with its courage and bravery the indestructible faith of the people of Western Sahara in its cause and its firm belief in the ignorable victory. To summarize, Mr. Chakasan, I would like to say that as General Chiap of Vietnam said when he visited the Sahrawi camps, he said that the imperialist and the colonialist, the colonizer, are very bad students of the history. In fact, exactly what Morocco is doing, it is what, for example, France was doing in Algeria, to try to denature the problem, to try to go not behind, in front of the problems, but to try to win time and to refuse the reality. Now, Mr. Chairperson, I would like to say that for human rights, because I think it is also the purpose of this kind of meeting of solidarity, we all know that MINURSO is the only one mission of the United Nations since 1991. It means since the Polisario Front accepted the ceasefire, that has not a mechanism for observing the human rights. It's unbelievable, but there is this discrimination. What it becomes a general practice and rule. Well, and also I would like to pay a tribute to the African Union and all the African countries and organizations that are saying this African problem cannot be ignored. We cannot ignore the legitimate right of an African country and an African people. This is the honor of a continent. I would like also to add one thing because it is interlinked and interrelated. It is the illegal exploitation of the natural resources of the Western Sahara. As we discussed the defense of the rights of the people of Western Sahara, as well as the support for it, we should not forget the problem led by the illegal exploitation of natural resources in the Sahrawi occupied territory. Especially knowing that this act, which violates the international law, creates situations of collusion with the occupant and reinforces its illusion regarding the pertinence of the pursuit of its policy of occupation and violation of the natural rights of the Sahrawi people. We don't have time because I wanted to give also an international legal point of view, just to remind that all the resolution of the UN, General Assembly or Security Council, almost mention the legitimate rights of the Sahrawi people to self-determination. The International Court of Justice in 1975 said that the Sahrawi people should benefit from the principle of self-determination. But in conclusion, Algeria, which has always stood by the oppressed and fighting peoples, starting with the broader African peoples, including during particularly difficult historical circumstances, has always supported the just cause of the people of Western Sahara and will continue to its support until the realization of the legitimate rights of its people. My country has always stood and will continue to stand by justice and law. In 1974, when Algeria, through President Abdelaziz Bouteflika, who was at that time then the Minister of Foreign Affairs, extend the regime of apartheid from the UN and experts of multilateral matters, they will know that in the UN there is what we call Bouteflika's ruling. What is Bouteflika's ruling for diplomats, especially experts in multilateral areas? It is what President Bouteflika did to convince, to adopt the resolution refusing the credentials of the delegation of the apartheid regime. Now, all the good diplomatic schools, they teach Bouteflika's ruling. In the same time, we are supporting the group of the Sahara. We are very happy, very glad, very proud that the South African people reached its objectives. Unfortunately, our brothers in Western Sahara are still fighting for their rights. And I would like to say, just make a comparison. In the same period of 1975, there was a country that occupied another country, which is a big country in Asia. After that, by wisdom, they accepted to recognize the right to self-determination to the occupied, colonized people. I want to talk about East Timor. Unfortunately, it is not the case of Western Sahara. This is just to say that we, especially as Africans, especially countries like South Africa and Algeria, because we have a particular history in promoting the values, the principles, the objectives of this continent, of the peoples of the continent. It is our duty, I think, to continue to fight for the legacy and the law. This is, Mr. Chair, around the short message, maybe long message I wanted to say. And I would like one second to congratulate you and to thank you for all what you are doing for the right causes in the world. Thank you very much.
We shall now call for the civil society organizations to the speakers. There are three of them. The first one to take the floor will be Mr. Matlap, followed by Mr. Masuku, and followed by Mr. Bai, in that order. Is that it, Mr. Matlap?
Vesika. Chairperson, members of the Portfolio Committee, Ambassadors present from Kakada, comrades and friends. FOCUS is a broad forum that brings together a range of progressive and democratic forces and activists in South Africa to campaign, mobilize and plan what could be done to strengthen solidarity with Cuba, amongst others against the U.S. blockade, and in favor of even more stronger people-to-people and government-to-government relations between Cuba and South Africa. Cuba's solidarity with the people of Southern Africa through the 1988 Battle of Cuitzacoalcobamba in Angola was a decisive turning point in the defeat of apartheid. As FOCUS, we remember and applaud Cuba's provision of teachers, technicians, doctors, medical personnel to the people of Africa, Latin America, the Caribbean, and Asia. During the past 40 years, more than 35,000 African youth have been trained free of charge while studying in Cuban medical technical schools and universities. Cuba has gone beyond simply providing humanitarian relief. Recognizing the need to do something on a more long-term basis, Cuba decided to offer young people from the poorest regions of this country a chance to become doctors themselves. Most of the students would not have found it possible to study medicine at home without the financial grants they obtained from Cuba. The six-year course provides everything, from lodging, clothing, food, books, and a small amount of spending money. Even today, hundreds of Cuban doctors are doing a great job in this country and are prepared to work in very remote and dangerous areas where our local doctors shun. We, as Focus, thank the Portfolio Committee for this dialogue and look forward to positive resolutions from this very important session. We thank you.
Thanks for that first 10 minutes.
Thanks, Sir President, and I must do even better. Thanks, Mr. President, almost to the opportunity by our parliamentarians and the government for affording us the opportunity to discuss the important matters before. First and foremost, we say that all protocol observed, chairperson of the committee, ambassadors, members of parliament, and civil society, alliance leaders, and all colleagues. The trade union movement in South Africa is a zero question of Palestine, Western Sahara, and Cuba, as is every justice and activist all over the world. We have indicated as COSATU and other progressive forces that justice for some is justice for none. The world is held ransom by the forces of imperial domination, which is constituted by the United States, European Union, and Israel. The common denominator between the three countries, that is Cuba, Western Sahara, and Palestine, that we are gathered about today, is the three countries led by the United States and their ambitions to exercise domination and control throughout the world. On Western Sahara in particular, I've had the privilege of being in the camps in Algeria, Tindouf, and I've experienced the pain and the brutal experiences of the Sahrawi people, some of who are 35 years or more, but have never seen the place called home. They have been refugees all their lives. We have expressed our right and continue to support the right to self-determination and freedom from colonialism. It is a stain on our conscience as the African people and all who suffered in post-colonialism that we have allowed them continue to allow Morocco to dominate and colonize the country on our own continent, despite the years of hard struggles that we have waged as a people. We continue to experience the plan of the natural resources of the Sahrawi people, and therefore, it is a responsibility for all playing, or at least have an element of commitment to justice,
to stand up and defend the rights of all people who suffer from colonialism,
not the Sahrawi people. On Palestine, colonialism is a threat to justice and security. This is not false silence and cohabitation of the colonized and the colonized. The experience we have seen in Palestine in particular is that there is a false sense of consensus being led by the United States and Europe. The assumption that there can be peace between the colonized and the colonized, a fact must be made clear. It is impossible to have peace between the colonized and the colonized. The only way to attain peace and justice is to end colonialism, occupation, apartheid. There is no other way to have peace. South Africa would not have been free if there was no ending of apartheid. There could be no peace under apartheid. So there can be no peace under colonialism and apartheid in Israel. Therefore, we also know that sometimes there is a tendency to condemn evil and apportion evil responsibilities to the colonizer and the colonized. The colonizer has a duty to fight for their freedom, and they must not owe no one any apology for that. They must use enemies to fight for their freedom, because we all did so. It would be cowardice of them not to fight for their freedom, and to lament the hope that something called the international community will assist them, because there is nothing that will assist them except their own struggles. Therefore, we call for the ICC to charge Netanyahu for crimes against humanity, for the murder of children and women in Palestine, and for denying the Palestinian people their rights. We support the call for a boycott of all Israeli goods and the termination of all relationships with the murderous state of Israel, and welcome all other countries that have demonstrated seriousness to the isolation of Israel.
There is no amount of rhetoric and false concepts are still being that will change the conditions of the Palestinian people who are daily subjected to the death and plan of their lands. And in Cuba, Cuba has become the epitome of human dignity. It has fiercely defended the freedom of all colonized people as if they were their own. They fought for freedom and defended the people of Angola. They defended the people of many peoples of the Latin Americas and various peoples over the world. And they specialized sons and daughters in all these lands, including the freedom we are enjoying in South Africa is largely, or mainly, also a contribution of the Cuban people and blood of their own sons and daughters. They also jealously defended the alternative to the savage capitalist system that is whose ruthless effects we are seeing all over the world. In this regard, we demand and support the rights of the Cuban people to assert their own developmental path and to choose what form of developmental path they want, free from Washington considered as any treacherous and ruthless exploitation we've seen all over the world. We demand the ending of the U.S. embargo and the release of the Cuban rights. And for these reasons, Chairperson, we support the parliamentary efforts and the activities that we are beginning to see, because there will be no peace in the world, or there will not be an isolated island of peace and justice when the whole world is on fire. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Your Excellencies, honorable members of this portfolio committee, members of the civil society. Here I'm representing Western Sahara Solidarity Forum that was formed on the basis of Resolution 1541 of the General Assembly that we're seeking to ensure the colonized countries, particularly in Africa, are free from imperialism and colonialism. Yes, indeed, it happened. Not all. I remember very well, Jefferson, the words of the former Prime Minister of Britain, called the wind of change, or hot air. I like the last part of it, the hot air. When these countries were decolonized, politically, yes, economically, no. Because we happen to see, particularly in Africa, conflicts that are happening from one country to another. Where is our solidarity in it? We are a nation in South Africa that sees the freedom through international solidarity, not only in Europe, but in Africa as well. Lesotho was one of the countries that lost their gallant sons and daughters when they were brutally murdered by the agents of the then South African government. We witnessed that. The Matole in Mozambique, we witnessed that. This conference comes at a time when we are also trying to look what we agreed as ANC on the 2012 ANC International Conference on Solidarity. Indeed, we have to create solidarity with other countries that are being affected. Colonialism will never end in Africa if we are not united at all. If we still see each other as people who must be a victim and people who must be a perpetrator, never. It has been a lesson to Latin America. Cuba has been given support to all our people, irrespective of their economic conditions in that. We have seen what they have done. Chair will pardon me because I grew up in this particular school where we call the chair. because now I'm in Parliament, I have just freed from that. I'm making a call on behalf of the Sarawak people. We have political prisoners who are facing harsh conditions, who are right in Moroccan prisons, not being given a proper treatment in terms of the international law when it comes to the internment to the political prisoners. Recently, on the 17th of February, 2013, 25 Sarawi civilians were charged by a Rabat American court. Tell me on X, where have you ever seen a man, there has never been carrying a gun, being charged by an American? What civilian means, if you must go and face a military court? All of them, the 25, not even a single one who was discharged or get less than 10 years imprisonment. Question yourself, what is our morals in terms of the law that says to us? 25, as far as I remember, it was a big number. The last prison trial in this country, it was the grandmaster prison trial with 22 accused. I happen to be one of them leading that 22. Yes, from the smart you know that one. These are the issues. Some of us from the grandmaster prison were released on appeal, others were given a discharge. But in Moroccan military court, there's no one. They were given a sentence that starts from 20 up to life sentence. What's happening in the whole world? Where are we as South Africa? A product of solidarity, where are we? Again, Jefferson, we need to look what's happening with the AU. The AU was supposed to be champion. The choice between the Republic of France and Morocco. And we are quiet on that. It was recently on the last summit in Addis Ababa, where the deputy president of Angola stated very clear that the AU Commission must lead in the forefront of that. It is up to you, as members of this parliament, to take a decision and also influence the PAG, so that they should recommend that the UN under Ambassador of, they are not doing enough. What Morocco has no claim at all over the issue of Western Sahara. It's not about culture or religion. It is about their natural resources. Because already, Jefferson, they have occupied west of Western Sahara. That is rich on substrate, fish, and so on. Now, it's not about the issue of tradition, it's about the natural resources. Sahrawis are becoming victims on a daily basis of human rights because they want to protect their natural resources. Thank you, Chairperson.
I get the sense my conversation power is about to end. And I'd like to make a few housekeeping announcements before we break for tea. We are now going to break for tea, which is about in 15 minutes. I was going to recognize that they could make it 10. They would say anything to do that. They won't be able at all. Those want to go to the toilets first as we go for tea. I think people need to know where to go. Then let's start there. For men, if when you go out there, you take immediate right at the corner, the toilet right here. For women, you go out, you don't turn, you go straight. When you hit the signals and you turn left, toilets will be there. And even more for other areas. We are going to, after tea, we'll be going to our different groups, Palestine, Cuba, and Western Sahara. where our leader, the groups, we have for the intergroup council that we sit at. We are going to have people are going to be leading you to those different venues. Those likely will Palestine, they will be led to this venue. So if you can find it, we'll lead you to this venue. And those who are going to the super group, it is room V475. That is Chuba. It is in the fourth floor. You'll be led to that. The lady coming in, well, what group are you leading? And it's Chuba, come over, come to me. That lady will be leading the Chuba delegation. Can't it? Can you take a walk on the record for this? Yes. After you follow her, she will be taking you to V475. That is those who are dealing with the Chuba group. Those who are dealing with this Western Sahara, they will be in S12A. It is in this floor. We'll go out, or here is the leader. After your tea, if you go to F, you'll be turning straight to the left, he'll be leading you there. After that, we are suggesting that we are back for lunch at 1. The old assembly dining hall, and if you go out through the door, you go straight to your left, the wall that you are looking at, it is the old assembly dining hall. Out of the room, to your left, the door will be there leading you to the old assembly dining hall. That's where we'll be having our lunch. My process here, is there anything that I've discussed? I'm pretending to all these things. They are telling me all these things. Thank you ever so much, Ben, for allowing me to colonize you for these hours. We can up through for this session, go out for break, for tea, and then from there you go straight to your room for discussion.
Thank you. Thank you.
Let's the testimony welcome. We have to begin our session. I am Bongani Masuku, International Election Mari of Kodak. And I will be not making inputs but facilitating the discussions. There are colleagues who make inputs who are on the program. And we want to request that first and foremost, could we have a volunteer who will volunteer to join our studying team to assist the draft? Anyone who is willing to volunteer to join. Because the most important thing is that we must produce a declaration. My colleague will be responsible for that, but we need someone who will work with her on drafting. Anyone who wants to work with her. Who's that? Oh, okay, Mohammed. Okay, no, thank you very much. That's very much welcome. To the extent which is possible, colleagues, I would request that we come closer. Because we are not coming, but it would be useful that we intention that. Because I can see, for instance, I don't know when it's because there were MPs there. So we might be skeptical of being called the MPs. You can come closer here. So you are welcome to join the MPs there. So that we can be able to have a closer conversation. Particularly, colleagues and comrades who are either there. It would be useful so that we entice more close, that we cover the spaces here, so that the intention is more close. Okay, then pretty much I think must begin from the program. As I indicated, I'm with Dineo Musala, who is the content advisor to the subcommittee, who will also be assisting with coordinating the styling and all other related matters. It would have been good to have the introduction of who is here, but I'm sure time is on our side. But what we request is that when you speak, you indicate from which organization and who are you from which organization, to which school, so that it allows us to have a clue of who is here. I think we done. There are two speakers that will make inputs for the first 15 minutes. And I will call them in two calls. The first one will be Matthew Monberg, and the second one will be Naeem Jina. For 50 minutes. But before that, it would be useful and fair to indicate that the idea is that we must produce something coming out of here. So everything we do and say must assist that process. So it means our discussions are very important so far as they ultimately guide us what should be done. Because the biggest problem is not to analyze the problem. The biggest issue is to have a product. That is, we must have something to produce. So I always listen to the two speakers. We will also be able to see how what could be the possible cause of action, what should be done, so that we can be able to come out with a declaration that is content, not only content, but also process and practical. Process oriented, but also very practical for all of us. I don't want to take much time, unless there is any real something. Okay. So I want to request, without further waste of time, Comrade Mazi to join us to come and make a presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Honourable Ms. Mahama, members of the Portfolio Committee, members of the Diplomatic Corps, distinguished guests. Thank you for this opportunity to present the views of CARES Southern Africa. CARES Southern Africa is an ecumenical voice on local and international issues of justice from within the broader Christian community. We are connected to CARES movements worldwide that are all inspired by the liberation theology tabled in the 1985 South Africa CARES document. This includes our connection, this includes CARES Palestine and its declaration of steadfast faith, hope and love from within the suffering of Palestinians. Our Christian message is that we must love our enemy. In the spirit of this message, we want to overcome the dualism that enables separatism. We recognize the humanity of both the oppressor and the oppressed, and our actions are informed by our vision for a reconciled justice between Israel and Palestine. However, this does not mean that we are prepared to compromise our message of vigorously opposing injustice. Just over a year ago, Kaura Southern Africa accompanied a group of senior clergy from South Africa to Palestine and Israel. The group included the heads of the Methodist and the Uniting Presbyterian Churches, the Secretary General of the Evangelical Alliance of South Africa, the Deputy Moderator of the Dutch Reformed Church, and the representatives of the South African youth. I read from their media statement. They said, "We affirm the right to security, self-determination and dignity for both the Palestinians and the Israelis. Real security is only possible through the exercise of justice. We are conscious how a literal reading of the Bible, one where the Israel of the Old Testament is confused with state of Israel, can result in the oppression of people. We confirm that the crisis in the Holy Land is in essence not a religious conflict, but a political crisis brought about by the violation of international law. As South Africans, we believe that we have a moral obligation to speak up and to stand with the oppressed. We do not want to side against the Israelis, but we do want to uphold international law and fight against any form of injustice. Today, you will hear central themes from this message in our argument to support our request to the South African government." Just first to clarify, who are we speaking about when we speak about the Palestinians? And basically, they are those who live in the occupied territories, Gaza, East Jerusalem, and West Bank. They are the refugees as a result of the wars. And then they are also those who live within Israel, and where more than 50 laws regulate their status at every level of life, relegating them to second-class citizens. All of them, Muslims and Christians alike, are our concern. So what do we mean by intensifying the struggle? If showing solidarity with the oppressed means merely issuing declarations, we say it is not enough. What would then constitute an appropriate response? Let us consider the options of a small entity occupied by a regional military superpower backed by the USA. First, is violent resistance against the violence of occupation a viable option? History where we come from, Cairo, South Africa comes from. In 1985, the South African Cairo documents recognized the violence of apartheid here as the primary violence which elicited violent resistance from the liberation movement. The Cairo document then, as Cairo, South Africa does now, does not advocate violence. Instead, we strongly advocate vigorous non-violent resistance. Silence. But we need to say, silence is an option, is an opinion. Inaction is an action. Therefore, failure to resist the Israeli government makes us complicit in crimes against humanity. What about negotiations? Israel claims that it wants peace and does enter into negotiations, but they also continue at the same time to expand its settlements. Is there currently enough pressure to ensure that both sides will bring all parties to the table and honor international law and the outcomes of an agreement? We do not think so. The USA can hardly be seen as an honest and impartial broker in peace talks between Israel and Palestine. Israel receives 25% of the entire US foreign aid budget, and since 1976, Israel has remained the highest recipient of US foreign aid in the world. Phyllis Bayes from the Institute for Policy Studies in the USA said that if the USA was serious about peace, it would tell Israel, stop building your settlements on Palestinian land. And granted, the USA have made this request many times. And if Israel continues to respond by refusing, as Israel has been doing all along, and if the USA is serious, it should then, one, stop funding to the state of Israel, and two, protecting Israel, stop protecting Israel in the United Nations. But the USA says it does none of this. The current negotiations are not bringing Palestine and Israel and the world closer to a vital peace. Thirdly, what about the option of non-violent resistance in the form of boycotts, divestment and sanctions? Well, this is indeed what the civil society of Palestine called for in 2005. Here, during the darkest hours of South African apartheid, an ecumenical group of South African theologians called the deepening crisis a current moment of truth. They highlighted the danger of using a literal fundamentalist political interpretation to rationalize theologies of oppression and state power. And what they said is that such a Kairos moment, one which is decisive in history, may pass us by if we do not act timelessly. Now, given this option of BDS, we need to ask ourselves an option of negotiations that are not working and the option of violent resistance. What will our actions be? We do not carry the responsibility of all history, but the current moment implies that we are responsible for our times. In that sense, this opportunity is unique. It is for us to see this form of apartheid. It is for us to understand and act upon through, as we believe, non-violent means. However, the non-violent option of BDS is not favored by pro-Israeli supporters. They tell us the situation is complex and that a balanced approach is necessary, hoping to lock the opponent into endless discussions to paralyze them. Their arguments also suggest that the two sides of the story carry equal weight and should be treated accordingly. Well, nothing could be further removed, could be further from the truth. We know the story about settlements. We know about all the atrocities. I'm not going into that. Now, I must also argue that the people of Israel are God's chosen people and that the promised land, which includes Palestine, was given to the Jewish people by God. They do not distinguish between the biblical entity and the modern nation state. We reject fundamentalism and exclusivist interpretations of religious scriptures just as the South African theologians in 1985 did when they found the principles of love, inclusivity and pluralism in the Bible. But when one argues from the perspective of international law, the situation is actually very, very clear. Both Palestine and Israel need to adhere to international law, UN resolutions and other applicable legal rulings. Admittedly, there are periodically some incidents of illegal violence targeted at civilians by Palestinians, but these cannot be compared to Israel's dedicated, discriminatory, systematic, systemic, institutionalized oppression of the Palestinians, which violates international law every single day on multiple levels. We support the aspirations of Israelis and Palestinians for security and self-determination. But with regard to Israel's treatment of Palestinians, we want to highlight 5 points. 1. All violence against all civilians, Palestinian or Israeli, must end. 2. Israel, a country that calls itself a democracy, must stop its discrimination on the basis of race, religion, or any other factor against its Arab citizens. Israel must be held accountable for its violations of human rights. 3. The more than 6 million Palestinian refugees have a legal right to return. A resolution of this matter consistent with international law and equity is necessary. 4. The Israeli occupation of the West Bank, the Gaza Strip and East Jerusalem must end. Until such time as this occupation does end, Israel as the occupying power must protect the Palestinian civilian population, administer the territory for their benefit as specified by international law, and stop confiscating Palestinian land and resources under the pretext of security or for any other reason. 5. The USA should not be the only broker in the peace negotiations and deals. In this respect, the UN needs to meet its responsibilities. We know that Palestine has been under military occupation for 47 years. The illegal ways, the point that I want to make is the illegal ways by which Israel occupies Palestinian territories effectively diminishes the possibility of self-determination. We are appalled that Israel uses its occupying power to take more and more land from the Palestinians while simultaneously destroying Palestinian infrastructure, routinely destroying Palestinian infrastructure daily, and making living conditions unbearable, inhumane for Palestinians. I'm not going to go into the details of what actually happened in Gaza, East Jerusalem, and the West Bank, because we are not debating whether we should act, but rather what actions are necessary. Just this one point. Israel uses the pretext of security for its confiscation of land and its restrictions on where and when Palestinians may travel. But in September 2012, the Israeli Supreme Court rejected a petition challenging the Israeli authority's refusal to let 5 women from the Gaza Strip travel to the West Bank to complete their master's degrees. What happened in the court? The Israeli Supreme Court accepted the Israeli's position that allowing the students to travel through Israeli territory would, and I quote, undermine the separation policy, which is based on both security and political considerations. In doing so, and I quote from a UN report, the court effectively approved restrictions on civilian travel between Gaza and the West Bank, even where no individual security concerns are raised. We need to ask ourselves whether the Israeli government and its supporters' outrage at the escalation in boycott statements and sanctions actions against Israel is not perhaps hypocritical in view of Israel's own restrictions and its oppression of the Palestinians. Just a few notes on a lasting solution before I come to our request. We believe that the acts of an oppressor injure not only the oppressed, but the oppressor too, and the oppressor's partners or allies. Some Christians in the United States, for example, recently confessed to the role their country played in both the Holocaust and in Israel-Palestine. And in South Africa, we also have experience of how true this is. At Cairo Southern Africa, we cooperate with South African, Palestinian, and Israeli people who belong to the 3 Abrahamic religions, Judaism, Islam, and Christianity, and who advocate for a just peace based on international law. These are the people who share our values of inclusivity, plurality, and human dignity. We are not fighting people. We are fighting a system. We ask ourselves, what will be necessary to ensure self-determination after occupation? And we want to be co-travelers with those who are willing to open themselves up to the other, so that jointly we learn from one another, reconcile, and live in lasting peace. I now come to our request. Any attempt to remain neutral in this kind of conflict is both futile and immoral. Neutrality enables the status quo of oppression to continue. It is a way of giving tacit support to the oppressor. Again, we are not taking sides against Israeli people, but we unequivocally reject the Israeli regime's treatment of Palestinians. The role of the South African government is unique in the world, given our country's history of apartheid and the ways in which we overcame the institutionalized injustices of the system. This year, we celebrate our 20th year as a democracy, and the United Nations also declared this year a year of solidarity with the Palestinian people. By not responding when we know about the injustices and human rights violations suffered by the Palestinian people, we will be allowing and enabling an act our permission. By responding insufficiently, we will prolong the suffering and the damage. This is our Kairos moment. Kairos Southern Africa explores a moral standpoint. We are witnessing a worsening situation. We see Israel using negotiations to prolong the pain, to intensify the occupation and to confiscate more resources. All hostages must now stop. We want all injustices to stop now, as we want it for ourselves during our struggle, and it is for this reason that we request the following from our government. 1. We want complete military, diplomatic and financial sanctions against Israel until it complies with all applicable UN resolutions and international law and ends the occupation. 2. In the global arena, we want our government to lobby for the financial and other support for the Palestinians for socio-economic development after the end of the occupation. 3. We want our government to implement the above two requests and to table these requests both at the African Union and the United Nations. And 4. We also call on all political parties, South African political parties, to clearly communicate their stance on the plight of the Palestinian people and to make their views known timeously in the build-up to South Africa's 2014 election. I thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much, Mati, and thank you for a very provocative and interesting presentation. As you indicated, we will be able to pick up the critical points you have made to us in the discussions to help us in the finalization of our final outlook. Can I request the complete Naeem Jinnah to join us on the platform?
Thank you, Comrade Ongani, and thank you to the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee for inviting me to speak here this afternoon, but secondly and more importantly for actually organizing this solidarity conference. And I think that the discussion that we have this afternoon and later when we come back to the plenary really needs to be guided, as Marty alluded to, needs to be guided by the statement that the Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee made earlier on, particularly that we are now beyond the stage of talking about whether we should have solidarity and who we should have solidarity with. That is clear. And now the issue is how do we effect that solidarity. And so the topic that I gave for this particular group is intensifying the struggle for self-determination of the Palestinian people. So it's quite clear on the topic that there is a response to that call by Mr. Magama, that it's about intensifying the struggle for Palestinian self-determination. It's not about whether there should be self-determination or not. So I'm going to speak to a few very concrete points about how I think that we should be discussing the issue of intensifying the struggle for Palestinian self-determination and Palestinian rights, etc. I want us to consider, before I get into these few points, that when we say we, in a sense we're referring to a number of different groups here, not kind of organizations, but particularly we're talking about a number of us that belong to civil society organizations, whether from solidarity groups or NGOs or whatever the case might be. And we are also talking to those of us that represent government. I'm not sure that they hear that now, but we're talking to them anyway. Those of us that represent government, and of course those that are parliamentarians. So not bringing them into the same category as government. So we're talking about ourselves in terms of three different categories. And so whatever measures we talk about undertaking to intensify the struggle for Palestinian self-determination needs to consider which of those categories such actions should be undertaken by. And it doesn't have to be only one, it can be more than one. Perhaps the first and most prominent of these to talk about, of course, in the Palestinian case is the Palestinian Corps for Border Divestment and Sanctions, BDS. And the reason I say it's the most prominent one that we need to talk about is because this is an authentic call from Palestinians. It's not something that we need to discuss about, is it a good thing or a bad thing. It's what Palestinians are calling for. So Palestinian civil society and political organizations in 2005, about 200 of them, issued this call for boycott, divestment and sanctions. Sessions in some ways on sanctions calls that were made by South Africans from the 1960s until the end of the 1980s. And so we don't really have a choice but to respond to that call. I want to say that it is really quite disappointing that none of those who regard themselves as official representatives in some odd way of the Palestinian people, political representatives, had actually clearly and unequivocally supported the BDS call as being their call. Now, you know, to say that we support the right of civil society to call for BDS is not what I'm talking about. Whether it's the Palestinian Authority, or Fatah, or Hamas, none of the main Palestinian political groups have unequivocally supported the call for BDS, even though BDS is a call that has been made by 200 organizations, and really, frankly, is the only real game in town at the moment in terms of Palestinian solidarity, town being the whole world. So the first thing that we need to talk about is what does the BDS call mean for all three of these levels that we're referring to, civil society, South African government, and parliament that is convening this. Certainly I think that within civil society there's a lot of discussion about this. And lots of moves to take forward in various kinds of ways, and I think that those debates will continue, and in the discussion time, I suppose civil society representatives can talk more about that. In terms of the other two levels, a couple of things that I want to mention. One is, I think, if the South African government accepts the position that was put forward by Honorable Mr. Magama and by John Sihole, and to a lesser extent by Deputy Minister Fransman, then we are obligated at least, but the government is obligated at the very least to begin going beyond labeling, going beyond the issue of how we should be labeling products. The fact that from 2005, coincidentally this was the year, not 2005, 2003. From 2003, when the Minister of Trade of Israel at the time and the former Prime Minister, what's his name? Ehud Olmert. When Ehud Olmert visited South Africa in 2003 and signed a trade agreement between South Africa and Israel at that time. From 2003 until now, trade between our two countries, between South Africa and Israel, has been increasing at least 15% in each direction. If we look at the figures for 2009-2010, which are the last figures I've seen, proper figures, exports compared to the previous year from South Africa to Israel had increased by 14.5%. Imports had increased by 24.5%. And so we can't talk about seriously wanting to intensify the struggle of Palestinian self-determination if we don't put the brakes on this kind of escalation of trade. Now, I'm not even saying anything as radical as Marty did about ending trade and diplomatic links. I could, but I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is, put the brakes on this kind of escalation. That there are still attempts, every now and then, to send some kind of a defense delegation from South Africa to Israel is a serious problem. Yes, the government has stopped that from happening, but every now and then some diplomat wants to take a defense delegation from South Africa. Officially, South Africa sells no weapons or weapon components to Israel. Unofficially, we have heard, such trade does take place. If we're serious about intensifying the struggle for Palestinian self-determination, these are the things that we should start with talking about. Let me move on from BDS, because as I said, that's one of the things that we all know and we can all talk about. I think another practical thing that we need to look at what kind of role we can play in, and this perhaps the role for all three levels that I spoke about, is Palestinian reconciliation. One of the big problems from the Palestinian side in prosecuting the struggle for Palestinian self-determination, Palestinian rights, etc., is the division within Palestinian, particularly political society. And so Gaza is governed on its own, the West Bank is governed on its own, and I say I would use the word governed in inverted commas, because when you're living under occupation, you're not governing anything, frankly. We like to think that that's the case, but it's not. They are living under occupation. Gaza is under siege, it's not a sovereign state. The West Bank is, big part of the West Bank is completely under Israeli control, other parts partially under Israeli control, other parts are under Israeli control at night and not during the day, and the Palestinian Authority as a whole, when they talk about Gaza or the West Bank, are really the equivalent, I suppose, in some ways of our Baluchistan governments. They're not sovereign. They don't control a state. So Palestinian reconciliation, I think, should be the main focus, certainly, of the South African government in terms of the contribution that we can make to furthering the Palestinian struggle. Because any negotiations that might take place between Palestinians and Israelis that doesn't consider that Palestinians are a fractured group, that doesn't consider that Palestinians are a weakened people at the moment, politically and otherwise, is doomed to make the occupying power, the superior partner in such negotiations, the more powerful player in such negotiations, and therefore the winner in such negotiations. And so the Palestinian reconciliation, I think, and building, assisting to build Palestinian capacity in this regard, is all that we can claim. And another role, I think, is on various kinds of ways in which we can be supporting Palestinian people and Palestinian individuals. And I was struck listening earlier on to accounts of how, for example, Cuba has supported the South African struggle. How many Palestinian students do we have in South Africa today that are studying here, being given scholarships by the South African government or by individual universities? I know Palestinian students who are not studying at home, but have tried to come here, and those who are here who are Palestinian students will be able to bear me out on this. But it's extremely difficult. It's extremely difficult for all foreign students in South Africa. But for students from a people with whom you claim to be expressing solidarity and who you want to assist politically, diplomatically, etc., but it's as difficult for them to become students in this country, I think it's a shame. Ask South African students who studied in India in the apartheid days what that meant, for example. Studying in India was an act of solidarity of the Indian government with the anti-apartheid struggle. For South African students studying in Cuba, whether in the apartheid days or now, is an act of solidarity by the Cuban government and the Cuban people towards South Africa. Do we have the same kind of act of solidarity towards Palestinian people and Palestinian students? I don't think that that's the case. Furthermore, in terms of that kind of action, programs that we need to look at, and this I think again, government and civil society, programs to assist Palestinians in various other ways, not with students assisting them here, but assisting them there as well. So for example, programs to assist Palestinians with health care. In Gaza, for example, a terrible situation. They might have lots of doctors, but they don't have equipment, they don't have medical supplies, etc. As well as in the West Bank and in Palestinian refugee camps in various places. I'm sure many of you who are following the Syrian situation would have seen the dire state of the Yarmouk refugee camp. This is a Palestinian refugee camp in Damascus that has been under siege. Whether you want to say they've been a hostage or under siege, whatever the case is, I'm not talking about Syria here, for weeks and weeks or months, people are starving. Okay, what kind of role can we play as South African government and civil society in assisting Palestinians there? The issue of witnessing, and I think that this is something that particularly for Southern African Civil Society, with the assistance of the South African government. The World Council of Churches, for example, has an excellent program called, I remember, EAPPI, Ecumenical Accompaniment Program for Palestinians and Israelis. I think I got it. Okay. I have a thumbs up, so I'm sure. But that kind of program, of having people there that are witnessing what is taking place on an ongoing basis, certainly plays a role. If you ask the EAPPI people about the kind of growth, just being there, and how that puts a curb on the kinds of excesses, not a big curb, but a small curb, on the excesses that might otherwise be committed. Bongani is clicking his pen, I think that means that I'm running out of time. The South African government can also play a role in strengthening a global diplomatic bloc that seeks to put pressure on the Israeli state to stop its human rights abuses, number one, and number two, to accede to the legitimate demands of Palestinian people instead of their self-determination rights. And those legitimate demands would be things like the dismantling of the illegal, of all the Israeli settlements which are illegal, all of them are illegal, the rise of return of Palestinian refugees, the ending of the occupation of the West Bank, the lifting of the siege of Gaza, the ending of the colonization of Palestinian water sources, etc. And so such a diplomatic bloc, I think, is crucial. And I think that it is not, or I think that it is disingenuous for us to continue saying that we really can't do anything on this kind of thing until we get some kind of lead from the Arab League. After the past 3 years, if anyone can think that the Arab League has any kind of real legitimacy, I think that's a serious problem. So I think it's time that we look beyond the Arab League. As much as South Africa has a position that conflict needs to be dealt with first at a regional level, etc., I think that regional level is in chaos. And so we need to look at countries such as South Africa, Brazil, being willing and able to take the lead on the international stage in creating a global diplomatic bloc that forgets that the Palestinian question is in the middle of the Arab world. That's not relevant. We live in a global village, and the Palestinian question is in the middle of our village. Finally, I think there's something that the South African government has been fairly slow or lax on is our obligations under the Rome Statute. South Africa is a signatory to the Rome Statute, and we have various obligations under that statute, one of which is to set up a special court to deal with war crimes and crimes against humanity. We should not be able to welcome, we should not be willing to welcome, and so society should not allow the government to be able to welcome war criminals from any part of the world, wherever they might be. And that certainly includes Israeli war criminals. The National Prosecuting Authority is sitting at the moment for the past few years with the Gaza Docket, which Khaled Bongani's organization and other organizations have endorsed. A docket that looks at the war crimes committed by Israel and Gaza in Operation Cast Lead. And in terms of which, and in terms of South Africa's obligations under the Rome Statute, any of the people listed in the docket responsible for those crimes should be arrested if they set foot in South Africa, on South African soil. The National Prosecuting Authority has not taken it further, and their argument is that there really isn't political will for this journey further. Where the responsibility for that lies, we can see. We also have legislation in South Africa about South Africans serving in mercenary capacities overseas. So there was a big thing you might remember about Iraq. And even South Africans were not fighting, but providing VIP protection to politicians at the time, American politicians, etc., fell foul of the regulation of Foreign Military Assistance Act. What about South Africans who serve in a foreign military, like the Israeli Defense Force? And yet there is proof that is the case. An associated document with the Gaza docket is a legal document that names 70-odd South Africans who have served in the Israeli Defense Force, particularly during Cast Lead, but not only during Cast Lead. That is our obligation in terms of our own legislation. If we're not willing to take that up, then how can we talk about this great solidarity that we have with the Palestinian people, 1,400 of whom were mercilessly killed by the Israeli Defense Corps in Kafler, apart from all the other abuses that Ashi spoke about earlier on? How can we turn a blind eye to that and then still talk about intensifying the Palestinian struggle for self-determination? Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Khalid Naim, and Khalid for a very useful input. Comrades and colleagues, we all have the same input now, that since this morning have been enriching our outlook and assisting us to be able to come to the actual text, the actual issues that matter. I just want to begin to summarize the critical thing that has come out from the presentations, because time is not on our side. But I saw that we all have been making notes that will be able to allow us to engage with them. But a few points will be worth noting that I would like us to think about as we now move to the next session, that is the engagement before we go for lunch. I will note a few hands for that. The first one is the foreign policy in South Africa. How democratic, transparent, I mean political parties. There's a point that was made about political parties having that manifesto now for election. Can we be able to use that as a political point that foreign policy should be a space for popular debate, for popular discussion? I do remember that this conversation in the last election with a seminar where we invited all political parties to present specifically on foreign policy. Look, sometimes there are some reasons that only economic policy must be controlled by the people. Foreign policy should be a subject of interest, but not a big layer. So I like the idea that all political parties should be useful to be able to give us a guide what their position is, particularly in relation to the issue. So that there is transparency. Because we do know that there are political parties that may appear to be colluding or may be known to be colluding with certain forces. Well, that's not the focus of foreign policy of the country. So I think that this is a very critical issue. The second one is that we need to identify concrete solidarity action points. This has already been raised very sharp. The issue of the Arab League and the region, it should be useful that as we talk, while various speakers have relationships, but it is useful to identify what is the state of the balance of forces there that will assist us to identify potential allies. Because the bigger problem is that if the region in its own, there is a need to be able to harness and strengthen forces. I want to make an example. The regional movement. We do know signals that we think are very progressive on this issue. But in international conferences, like we are going to Germany this year, we do know signals from that region who are used by largely the United States and Europe to be a problem. When you spot a resolution, they will tell you, we already have a neutral that has been able to summarize the interests of the Palestinians and the Israelis. So don't raise questions that insurgency is in the Middle East. They are from the same region, that is the Middle East. So to what extent do we identify potential allies in that region, and how can we manage that? The last point that I think is very critical is the role of the ICC. I'm not sure whether we have put sufficient pressure to what the ICC is about. Because if it can be able to clarify or declare war criminals in very certain terms, then there's a problem in international justice. So it means there is an activity in international justice. I think one of the things that we have been raising critically is how can the international criminal justice system, or the ICC in particular, be put on the spot of this particular question? Just like with the Kimberley process, it can also need to be. Because when they black diamond, people think only about Liberia and Sierra Leone, they think about Central Africa. But you have black diamonds that are flowing into Israel, including from South Africa. We've been discussing that in consulting that we are selling diamonds there when we are talking about beneficiation. We are creating jobs in Israel and there. So I'm sorry, I'm not making any move. I'm just relating to issues that we'll be able to also, this house make us need to assist us to be able to move a step ahead. I want to request to note hands from the floor that we'll be able to reflect. We are coming back to a discussion. So we will not only, we will not all speak now before lunch, but I will note a few hands. We will come back after lunch and we'll continue our discussion, and then from there we will be able to summarize the salient points. I want to start this time and not a few hands. And I will request that unfortunately you have to be very brief because lunch is coming. May I request that those who have spoken, I will request that you speak after lunch, if they don't mind. So that you can allow the conversation. But we're coming back to everyone. Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 for now. I'm coming to that. 6 for now. Can I request that you are very brief and allow everyone to do something? That's what I'm saying.
I just want to ask you one question. I'm Hindi, but not English. From 1948, when alongside there must be Israel, all governments today recognize it, the legality. Did South Africa sign there, or was it the nationalists? So we all job is one thing to prove that Israel is illegal. That's the only thing that the whole world must know. Israel is illegal. They got no borders. The country, what they do, they are illegal. So what are we speaking about? We are speaking, the moment we say Israel, too late when we recognize the existence of Israel. That's all.
Thanks a lot. I want to thank you and...
But I requested that you introduce ourselves so that we can do...
Okay.
Organization.
I'm Samuel from the Embassy of the State of Palestine. I want to thank my colleagues, Ms. Marty and my brother Naeem. I agree with them totally of what that they said. And now I want to highlight some points just to know, because we are talking about solidarity now, that in 2014, this year has been declared by the UN as the International Year of Solidarity with the Palestinian people. So I think it would be a good chance to start from this point and to take good action, not only declaration. We hope that the 2014 will be the year where international solidarity turns into political action. In this regard, we pray the European Union guidelines to grant and the prizes which were implemented on January 3rd. I want to highlight another fact that Israel wants to place the military occupation by force with a military occupation by invasion. This is what the Israeli government wants nowadays. The demand, for example, for Israeli security presence in the Jordan Valley is one example of this. To lie the foundations of peace, Israel should immediately stop its policies of direction, operation, occupation, and colonization. The people of Palestine need protection. It's very important. The people of Palestine need the protection from the Israeli occupation. Israeli security can never be guaranteed without the freedom for the Palestinian people. It's a fact. Over 20 years of peace process, Israel has violated a number of signed agreements with the Palestinian people. What is needed are not only meetings between the parties, but a clear international political will to implement previous agreements and international law. I want to give you some facts about its statistics. About the last year, 2013, just so a lot of people or a lot of politicians were talking about 2013 as a quiet year in Palestine. There is no war, there is no big action. But Just because we have to know, last year Israel killed 96 Palestinians. About 1,385 Palestinians were in jail. Israel arrested 4,533 Palestinians. Israel demolished 172 houses. Israeli or the settlers of Israel in jail or the victims of the Israeli settlers were 983 Palestinians. The rate about 5559. a lot of things. Just I want to about regarding the BDS, I want to share of what I did prepare. We are totally with the BDS. We are totally with the boycotting. It's because it's very active step that we expect a lot of things will be on behalf of the Palestinian people if the countries of the free world take this step. Now we were talking about tethering to Israel for a good step at that time, but nowadays I think the boycotting, it will be very helpful. And I will not repeat myself, but I agree with totally with what my friend Naeem Jinnah did say in his speech or in his presentation, and also my sister Matthew did say. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. I want to appeal. I know that maybe we can reserve the discussion for after lunch. Can we just ask questions to the two speakers, and then after lunch we'll have the discussion so we have space for engagement. Because we're supposed to have been at lunch already, but we allow a few more minutes. So can I just request questions, and then after lunch we'll come back for the discussion. Thank you very much. The head that I noted, if there are questions. Absolutely. So I think we will come back. That's very important. Brief and to the point, we will discuss better after lunch. And the one that I noted, could I request questions only?
Territories are Pakistan's. That's the first thing. Secondly,
there is a Jewish constituency out there that believes that it is not anti-Semitic to disagree with Israel. That's the second point. Number three, there is a Jewish Zionist constituency that believes that dialogue must take place with all elected parties, Hamas and Fatah. Number four, there is a Jewish Zionist constituency that believes that the right of return, Jerusalem, occupied territories, must be dealt with all of the same importance and with the same urgency. Number three, the last point is that there's also a Jewish constituency that believes in BDS, that believes in cultural boycotts, that believes in economic sanctions, that believes in educational boycotts. So there is a goodwill amongst many moderate Jews who still believe that the state of Israel can exist. What harms discussions, what harms movements to peace, is rhetoric about Zionist conspiracies, about Zionist controlling the world, about ICC talk, about things that are not helpful in a road to peace. All I'm suggesting for the committee here, or chair, is that there is an untapped resource that could be used, and that is, and it's growing, and it's growing, of moderate Jewish people that want peace desperately and would like to have their voice starting to be heard above politicians, above military people. And that is a resource that should be used both in South Africa and abroad.
At a profound point, I am also still facing the case of anti-Semitism criticizing Israel. So, and as anti-Jewish, so it's a very critical point to separate the two. I want to request the following. I will just join the females that are remaining and then the speakers will remain. May I request comment will bear with me, will be the first when you come back after lunch. So given time now, the few three hands that were remaining, and then I will have the speaker. And then say the speakers can respond when you come back. Sorry? When you come back. Okay. So can I request the remaining hands and then we can be able to sum up the questions specifically. Of course there are certain selectivities I do make. And even the discretion of the chairperson. We are finished with the agenda today. Can I request that we put off our mics? We put off our mics from the... Yeah. We have the meeting point. Okay, you were the next one. Sorry. One, two, and we were the next one. Three. Okay, this is the last one. Thank you very much.
Actually, mine is not a question. I hope you'll allow me to continue. It's a sentence intervention. Just one sentence. I'm from Delo. We do agree with the last speaker that the last presenter, Mr. Chena, that there is a role we can play in South Africa in the reconciliation of Palestinians. And we are determined this year to put a plan in place and run with it towards that. But naturally, we don't expect civil servants to do that on their own. We can only anchor the plan. But it needs the combined wisdom of South Africans to see it through. So we do hope that once we publish the plan, we'll get a lot of input from the combined South African wisdom. And also in implementing it, we'll rely also on the combined South African wisdom.
Thank you very much. And it's a gentle assurance that Kosas will be the first to respond. You are welcome. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. My name is Bongshalom Benegi, current South Africa. Two things. First thing is, I'm hearing all the correct political issues that should be done. But one thing I feel that is missing is the popular culture. The popular culture seems not to be part of this debate. How to include society, young people. If you remember, South Africa people who have solidarity with South Africa concert. This brought awareness to young, vibrant people and influenced universities to start pushing certain things. So I think we should include some forms of popular culture in our campaign. This will even give a morale to people in Palestine. The morale is down, I was there. You could see that they are lonely and the hope is starting to decrease. Popular culture brings that high, and this was evident when a Palestinian, when a pop, Arabic idol, the morale of the people because of that increased tremendously. And I think we could play a fundamental role. Lastly, I think we should encourage a lot of people to go to see for themselves what is going on. And we must find means and ways for that to happen. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mombe. It's very important particular because the youth has become a special target by the United States. Particularly not only from South Africa, from the rest of Africa. There is the rest of the discussion that is taking place on that. The African.
I just want to ask about the double standards here and whether it will be applied to other countries that are also practicing apartheid, even in regards to the Palestinian issues. For example, Lebanon, the apartheid laws in Lebanon banning Palestinians from owning property and working professions. Kuwait evicted 250,000 Palestinians from their country, and even Yasser Arafat said that what Kuwait did to the Palestinian people is worse than what has been done by the Israelis. Will this campaign also address the potential Palestinian state in the future with their potential apartheid policies when Mohamed Abbas says, I would not agree, and I'm quoting him here, he says, I would not agree that they will live amongst us even a single Israeli on Palestinian land. That's the one question. Second question, I want to know, what alternatives are you going to offer the 15,000 Palestinians that are employed by Israeli factories in the so-called West Bank Samaria area, who are earning an average of 2 to 3 times from the Israeli factories that employ them than the average salary amongst the Palestinians and the Palestinian territories. And this is why you will find in surveys that 73% of Arabs in Israel that have been surveyed will tell you that they will not live in a Palestinian state and that they will violently stand up against being forced to live in a potential Palestinian state one day because they live much better than any Arab in any surrounding state in the region. Thank you.
Yeah, no, thanks very much. I'm sure that our presenters were taking down the notes. I'm sure the question is about, the last question relates to the fact that I remember that in apartheid South Africa used to say the same thing. That they have left in South Africa are being the continent. So I'm not necessarily so I'm saying the response will be made, but yeah, it is something that probably strikes me tonight. Can I request that we go for lunch and we come back unfortunately due to the pressure of time at 2 o'clock. So we will start from this, we'll start with the respondents and then we'll have hands from the side. Apologies.
Sorry. Excuse me.
Speak up about the device for purposes of the Africa. Colleague, could I request the request for by the scribes to identify organization?
I'm a Montenegrin Christian for the vulnerable of both sides of the conflict and affiliated with a Christian organization as well. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. I don't think that we will get a time now. Can you go for lunch? And then at 2 o'clock we are there dealing with
we left there, bro. I'm just gonna, if he's an answer, we better an answer for his study.
No, no, don't worry, come back. You can't wait to discuss. Let's go for lunch. You come back at 2 o'clock.
It's going to be an apartheid state.